Thank you. And Adrian, would you mind leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thanks for that. And next on the agenda is our closed session report. Mr. Schultz.
Good evening. Prior to tonight's regular council met in closed session on three different items. They were both all three relating to real property transactions. The property discussed in closed session was the vacant lot at the corner of Coral and San Jacinto that the city owns, the property at 887 Atescadero Road, which is the Rigetti property. And the third property was the property at 307 Morro Bay Boulevard, which is the corner of Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street. As to all three of these property transactions, no action was taken by the council that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you for that. And with that, we'll come back to Mayor and Council members' announcements. And tonight I'll start off with a couple and turn it over. First one on the for the announcement is the Tip-A-Cop Dinner. Hold this up a little bit. Tip-A-Cop Dinner, that's Friday, June 28th, 2013, at the Morro Bay Community Center. Dinner starts at 5 p.m. Kitchen closes at 6:30. Tip-A-Cop Dinner is a unique experience where law enforcement officers are the servers for the evening. At these dinners, expect a good time, great food, lots of laughs, and only mediocre service. I'm reading this. This is a great announcement here. All the tips they receive are given as donations to the benefit of the Slow Special Olympics organization. So tickets are $150 per table of eight, $20 individual tickets, and $5 for children's tickets. And is there anything else to add to that, Chief?
I'm sure you'll have a very good time if you come join us on June 28th at 5 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. And the only other announcement I have, I just wanted to give a shout-out and a thanks for opening up the bathroom down on the parking lot down by the waterfront. That was great. Appreciate that. Appreciate your crew's work. Thank you. And I'll turn over to my left for any announcements. George? Christine?
Good evening. Yes, thank you. I have three congratulations and two announcements. So first, I'd like to send out a congratulations to the Morro Bay 4th of July Committee. They had their most successful Oyster Fest fundraiser ever that was held on May 19. And special thanks to the Tognazzini family for donating 100% of the proceeds to the 4th of July. There is a Stax wine raffle going on now with the 4th of July. And on their website, it says every one in five person will win a prize. So for more details, visit morrobay4th.org. or call 776-3301. I'd also like to congratulate the committee who presented the very moving and extremely well-attended Memorial Day and Lost at Sea ceremony at the Cayucas Pier yesterday. There were many Morro Bay residents who participated on the committee and at the event. It was a nice event for both Cayucas and Morro Bay to collaborate on something, and it was very nice that we presented that as neighbors to the whole community. So thanks for those of you out there who participated and came out as well. Also, congratulations to the following three adults at Del Mar Elementary who were recently recognized at the Del Mar Open House last week. The Staff Member of the Year was Wendy Munschauer. The Volunteer of the Year was Amy Burton. And a special award for 10 years of volunteering was given to Dawn McLean. Dawn also works for the city in the fire department as the administration tech. So when you see those three, please congratulate them on their volunteering. And finally, I've been asked by Nancy Castle to announce a big event at St. Peter's by the Sea Episcopal Church. And it is inviting everyone in the community to the celebration of a new ministry of the new minister, Sydney Symington. And it's going to be Sunday, June 9th. It's 5 o'clock in the evening, and it's at St. Peter's by the Sea Episcopal Church, which is 545 Shasta. Afterwards, there will be dinner and music, and all are welcome. For more information, you can call 772-2368 or go online to stpetersmorrobay.org. And then finally, we're at the end of May, so that's the end of Bike Month, and I was really inspired tonight by a resident, Bob Keller, who rode his bike all the way from his home down here tonight. So thanks for riding, and he did say that he has to go home before it's dark because he doesn't quite have the right lights. So thanks, Bob. You're a real inspiration to us. Thank you.
Finally official. In fact, tonight we have an item on our agenda about that. And we will be starting with a public meeting on June 3rd at 4 o'clock, from 4 to 5:30, actually, at the Community Center. This is the very first real official committee meeting. Before that, we've been kind of a think tank, just tossing ideas around. But this is open to anyone who's in the least bit interested about helping to celebrate the 50th anniversary of our city. So please plan to be there. Let's see, Morro Bay Community Center. Any close definition as to where we are? The studio room. So plan to join us Monday at 4. Thank you.
I just have a couple additionals to add there. One was to also recognize that the Morro Bay High School Boosters, they put on their fun run on Saturday following the musical concert, and it was put together by all volunteers, and it was just a really well-organized, fun event, and we got to do warm-ups and then run through the course with Morro Bay High School musicians playing there within all different stages of the course, keep you going. So they're planning on doing that again and expanding the whole concept even further next year. So look for that, and just wanted to say that they did a great job. And a couple of others. We have our AIDS ride coming through town on June 5th, pretty much all day. So just please, as you're driving around town on June 5th, be very careful. We'll have riders coming through town. It's going to be well organized as usual, but you'll have much more bicycle traffic than usual on that day. And also for our fire station, they've organized an event for National CPR Day, and it's going to be a training at the fire station on June 4th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's open to the public, and it's a training to help people learn the new hands-only CPR, which is easier to administrate and very effective, supposedly, from the initial analysis that they've been able to receive from the first couple of years that this has been utilized. So that's June 4th at the new fire station from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's going to be administrated by our own fire station and department. And our next budget workshop's June 12th, 5 p.m. here at the Vets Hall if you're interested in participating with that. And I did want to also congratulate the Veterans Support Group, which Deanna Kennedy, who some of you may know, has been the leader of. They've actually recently gone through the process and formed a nonprofit for the Veterans Support Group and are going to be having their first meeting since the nonprofit's been formed. And that'll be June 12th. At the usual location, which is the Eagles Hall on North Main Street, 2988 Main. And that's going to be June 12th, 6 p.m., and it's going to be a dinner potluck, and then talking about where they're going to go as a new nonprofit. And if you'd like to talk to Deanna more about what she's doing to help support veterans, you can call her directly at 440-9263. And that's about it, and I just wanted to also point out that for Mr. Keller and his bike ride, he did wear his helmet, so good job to be a good role model there.
Okay, that's it for announcements. Thanks, everybody. That brings us to public presentations, and we have Jason from the Grill Hut with us tonight that's going to give us a presentation on his new restaurant. Look forward to that.
Well, good evening. Thank you for having us.
Please state your name for everybody.
My name is Jason Shear from
Thanks,
the Grill
Jason.
Hut. My wife Lori and I opened the restaurant up about 8 weeks ago. It's over on North Main Street, 3118 North Main Street. Just like to introduce our business. We're a barbecue restaurant. We're a family-owned restaurant. We do take out. We do catering as well. And we have pulled pork, tri-tip, chicken, ribs. All of our meat is fresh, never been frozen. And all of our sides are family recipes. Down the line, somebody's family in our family has given us recipes. So everything's fresh. Again, it's 3118 North Main Street. We're about a mile north of the Bowie restaurant or tavern. Our phone number is 772-2008, and my wife and I are very excited to be a part of the Morro Bay community and do our part, and we just thank you again for giving us an opportunity to introduce our business.
Thanks very much, Jason. What were your hours again?
We're open daily from 11 to 8 on Friday and Saturday nights. We're open till 9, and we're closed on Wednesday.
Okay. Great, Jason.
Thank you.
Best of luck. Thank you for that. And now that we'll turn it over to public comment. This is an opportunity for public comment for any
in the cloisters, and that increase in income will help you defray the increased cost as we look ahead. But to sell that property and subdivide it, I think is it seems at least they should share in the cost of the maintenance and of the development of the cloisters. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I stand before you tonight in support of item D3, the designation of landmark trees, the listing. This item has taken many, many years to finally arrive, and I'm very pleased it's before you tonight. I'm also very pleased that our Public Works Advisory Board is recommending approval of all 20 designations. Once again, Morro Bay can honestly say we are a tree city. I want to thank Noah Smuckler, Wally McRae, and Taylor Newton for being the energy and the force behind this movement. They've spent a lot of time. They've organized a lot of help. There are a lot of citizens interested in having this happen. And so I would urge you, please, to follow their recommendation in its entirety. I guess that's about all for now. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you, Roger.
Richard Stowski. A little follow-up on the lot on Coral and San Jacinto. I noticed that the negotiating parties, Jeff Edwards and the City of Morro Bay. When I worked at the Cayuga Sanitary District, I had some interactions with Mr. Edwards, and I also, if I'm not mistaken, the city attorney during the negotiations with the firehouse at that time had to step down because of the conflict of interest there with regarding the sale of that property. I don't know if that's true or if I recall correctly, but I know that Jeff Edwards is a permit facilitator or was for the J.F. Shea Company, Inc., or Shea Homes, so that's something that I think should be noted. Also, I attended the Brown Act meeting that the city council had done here, and I just wanted to let the public know that reiterate something that I am I'm a member of the former Grand Jury Association, and I had personally talked to Gerald T. Shea, the Slo County District Attorney, and he stated to me personally that he is the first responder on Brown Act violations. For people to, if they have a Brown Act violation, to report it to his office, and I would suggest that they follow it up with the Attorney General as well. I also want to mention that in 2007, I co-wrote a report on the shortcomings and issues and concerns with the current joint powers agreement with the Cayuga Sanitary District. And I think that this is to move in any direction, any reasonable direction, the city needs to protect the citizens' interest. Currently, the city, regardless if Cayucas goes whether it goes with the city or not, there is a risk liability of the sewage that's coming from Cayucas entering the city limits. So regardless of any kind of agreement, if they're going to go with the city or not, I think those are issues that need to be addressed immediately. And, you know, to make an analogy, you know, a lot of people say this isn't rocket science. I tend to disagree because rocket science is based on common sense. And it's kind of like, regarding a project, it's like, you know, before you could launch a payload, you got to know how big it is. You got to know the capacity. So you got to know the size of the project. If Cayucas is on board or not, that's going to be determined what size of the project that Morro Bay is going to take on. So I sincerely
thank you.
Hope that you look into that matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, distinguished council, Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay. Since I was out of the area for the last council meeting, I'd like to talk to you about the very successful car show that was held the first weekend in May. I'd like to thank the recipients, the Rotary Club of Morro Bay, who always volunteer for that, especially David Owens, who has to take care of the barbecue, which is almost a three-day event, and the youth group, the Police Explorers from Post 43, out of the police station here, who, along with John Lewin, were out at 5 in the morning on Sunday, Saturday and Sunday, and that takes a little bit of effort for them, and they did a great job on the cleanup afterwards with all the signs and et cetera. We had 532 vehicles that were on the street, which was very, very good. We broke a record on Thursday evening for people who signed up. Take in mind that only approximately 7 to 8% of the 532 cars are from within this county. And on Thursday night, we registered 219, which is pretty close to half of those vehicles. Some of them are coming in on Sunday, then Monday, and then, of course, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the rest of the week. So I do appreciate that. Dennis Gage of My Classic Car, who has a TV show for 17 years, was a wonderful person and came, and he gave the car show a compliment and the city a compliment.
The most beautiful tree, one of the most beautiful trees I've ever seen. Number two, I'm not a fan of palms. Number three, yes, these healthy oaks are lovely. Number four, an important tree with our harbor in the background. Number five, Marina Napa, the Grand Cypress. Number six, an especially nice eucalyptus. Number seven, Morrow and Anchor, another cypress we all love. Number eight is one of the last on Morro Bay Boulevard. And number nine is my especially favorite tree. It's at Morrow and South Street, and it has been such a joy to so many of us over the years. And it just looks better every day. I don't know. It's a beautiful tree. Number 10, I'm not partial to. And I'm sorry to hear that number 14 of 15 is to be removed, and I don't quite understand that. I'd like to say that A3, these unfunded mandates, some of these are really scary, and I'll be looking at how if they pass or not. A5, no doubt, we need to keep the old plant functioning. Too bad $1.2 million is required. A7, for sure, support increased funding for the California Coastal Commission. They're especially valuable in our lives. I just wanted to say a little bit more about this committee that did the trees. We've been looking at these beautiful trees and wanting them to be designated and protected and be landmark trees for 30 years. And this committee did it. So I want to commend them for their strength and for putting forth all of these wonderful trees. I think most of us, we just drive along and here are these beautiful trees above us, and sometimes we don't even see the beautiful canopies of them. And so thank you all very much. Good evening.
Thank you, Linda.
Set this on top of
AGP, can we get some help on the video? Thank you. Thanks, Joe.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council and City Staff. My name is Jim Davis, resident of Morro Bay, and I'm here to announce the third annual Veterans Benefit Fundraising event. This is the third year we're going to have this in Morro Bay, and this is to support the veteran shuttle bus that's operated by Ride On Transportation, goes throughout the county, picks up veterans at their residence, takes them down to Santa Maria, and then from that point they're transported to Los Angeles for medical care, their veterans' medical care. This transportation service is widely used throughout the county, and it's 100% supported by donations. And so this event features a barbecue and a concert with Rio Salinas, one of Louis Ortega's bands, and also Bentley Murdoch, the Slow Ambassador, is going to be joining us with his band Soul Purpose. Going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be live and silent auctions. There's a Morro Bay getaway weekend package being planned. Nationwide stay at one of the Omni Hotel resorts that people can bid on. And a lot of good prizes, a lot of good food. Want to specifically thank Jeff Eccles, Eccles Wealth Management, for being the title sponsor. Stax Wine Bar, Red Zeppelin Winery, Festival After Dark, Ride On Transportation, and Zeta's Mobile Sound. All the community support. We could use some business support. If anybody would like to help out, it's on Facebook under Festival After Dark, festivalafterdark.com. We can use some gift certificates to auction off. And like I say, all the funds that are raised from this benefit go directly to keep the shuttle service going for our county veterans to get to Santa Maria. And in closing, there are 26,000 veterans in our county, 10% of the population. And so I think we as a city and as a county, when we take good care of the veterans, it makes even more a desirable place to live and also come visit. So I want to thank everybody for their support and their help for this year. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. Bill Martini. I just wanted to kind of make an announcement. Our neighbor, longtime resident, really a fabulous lady, just passed away. Eleanor Cobe on Sunday. A lot of the community has known her. They've been a family here that's been part of the framework of Morro Bay. And just wanted to let the people in the community know. I believe she was a former council member, you know, was on all kinds of committees and just a terrific person. So,
citizens that asked the Environmental Protection Agency to designate this as an estuary of national significance. And at that time, we drafted the first comprehensive management plan with the help of over 700 individuals from the community as well as state and local agencies to come up with the content. And this update is much in keeping with that existing information that we gathered, but we felt that we needed to update some things that happened in a decade, and so we did that. And I just wanted to thank all the community members who commented on the draft plan that we sent out last year, as well as the city staff who were involved in commenting and helping with the report. There are 7 priority areas that the management plan addresses, things like accelerated sedimentation, elevated nutrients, toxic pollutants, scarce fresh water, environmentally balanced uses, and et cetera. And in particular, we have best management practices here for harbor maintenance and boating and projects that we've been working on with city and city staff for a number of years, and we hope to continue to work with them in the future. So thanks very much, and I hope that everyone goes to our website and checks out the plan.
Thanks for your work, Adrian.
Hello, my name is Taylor Newton, and I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. Thank you for having me up here, giving me the opportunity, I mean. I just wanted to mention that this Sunday, June 2nd, 12 to 5 p.m. at St. Timothy's Catholic Church here in Morro Bay, over on Piney Way across from the Community Center, we're having the Eco Rotary Green Light Eco Fair to raise money for little solar, almost indestructible lights for our local homeless and for an orphanage in Ghana, Africa. And Mr. Eco, the rapping superhero from Cal Poly of much fame, will be there. He's doing two shows at 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. If you haven't seen him, you're really missing out. On another note, the tree thing that's up here tonight, thank you so much for finally passing this through. We put a lot of work into it at the tree committee. Wally McCrae deserves a lot of credit for keeping the tree committee alive over the years. And I just wanted to point out that I'm particularly attached for very good reasons to number four, that Monterey Cypress there. Let's see, number four, that one is really a postcard picture of what our city tree could look like. Number eight, let's see, that's the blue gum eucalyptus in front of a Sterographics. You know, that's a young blue gum, but really there's so much heritage in our blue gums, and that's really the point of the landmark trees, is it's about educating our adults and our children about the history of trees in Morro Bay, as well as these trees into the future. So blue gum eucalyptuses hold a huge part of our history in this town. All your houses would be full of sand if it wasn't for those trees, as well as the Monterey Cypress. Number 10, the avocado right there next to City Hall. That's in that new designated pocket park. I believe it's called the SP2 or Off-Leash Cat Park or something like that. That is a great little park that Park and Rec deserves a lot of credit for. Joe Woods is just a fantastic community partner. I think everybody needs to pat him on the back as much as possible. And that avocado is our only street tree that I know of that's an avocado, which is a huge part of our heritage here and our future, so give it some credit. The Canary Island Pines, number 11, not number 12, but number 11, that is something to be approved. Those Canary Island palms could be about 100 years old. Those goes back to the first trees that were planted by the settlers here. So there's some real history right there. And then number 5, the Monterey Cypress is over there on Marina and Napa. You know, I lived over there. I was with those trees. I spent some years with them, and that's a great grove. And when you're looking at educating, it's not just about a single tree. It can also be about a grove. And you're looking at as an organism, you know, one organism, a number of organisms living together as one. So thank you so much. I love this city.
Thanks, Taylor. Public comment still open.
Fix my wig here. Cut all my hair off. How's it going? It's me, Gary Hickson. My address is 761 Butte Avenue. I live next, apartment 5, I live next to the Morro Bay Coffee Company. I just want to say hello to everybody. And George Lee from the Great American Fish Company in the Harbor Hut. I used to work there. But I wouldn't bring George's bread or water until I served everybody else, which made him mad, according to Randy Roteau. But anyway, we wanted to film Cheers there. That didn't work out. I'm doing a thing called Mirror Vision Incorporated. There's a flight simulator. There's a company in San Luis, but I called them, and there was just a recording that, you know, we're basically not talking to anybody. So I'm still doing Mirror Vision, and I'm trying to do the Gary Tyler Moore Show and the Bionic Woman. Well, doing Ozzy Osbourne right now, so I don't think I'll last the whole 3 minutes, but I should.
Council. And there are a couple of questions out there I think need some follow-up. Does anybody else have any questions first off? George, any?
No.
I think we had some questions on the San Jacinto and Coral subject to assessment. And I don't know if you picked up on that, Rob, if you can reply to that.
Sure. As part of the development agreement, the requirement is that the property has to be used for fire-related purposes, or if the city determined it wasn't needed, then it can only be used for residential purposes. So it must be used for residential purposes, and it must be included in the Cloisters assessment and comply with all the Cloisters CCNRs and architectural design guidelines. So it will be part of the assessment if we go through and sell the property.
Okay.
And the proceeds from that sale, although we've determined that it's not the appropriate location for a fire station, those proceeds have to be used for fire mitigation purposes, so they can be applied towards our loan at the other location.
Okay, thanks for that. And the other one was, I didn't quite catch it all, maybe you did, as far as the conflict of interest on the Coral San Jacinto comment as well. I didn't catch all that. I don't know if you can respond to that.
No idea what he's talking about.
Okay. Any other questions back from council? With that, we'll close public comment at this time, and we'll bring it back for consent calendar. And we already did have some. The way it goes here, we have public comment for each item on the agenda, so we would open it up for consent consent items. If anybody had something they'd want to speak to on consent items, they could do so now. Seeing none, I'd close that and bring it back to council. And anybody would like to pull anything on the consent calendar? Consent agenda.
I'll pull A2, take advantage of Rick.
A2. Anything else? None? I've got questions on A3, and I think that's it. Do I have a motion to pull or to approve everything except for A2 and A3?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. A2, Noah?
Yes, A2 is the execution of the grant agreement with the Nature Conservancy for an additional $35,000 to finalize the creation of the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, which is a nonprofit to support regional fishing association and development. And I did want to give Mr. Alger a chance to discuss this, kind of highlight the work that's been going on so far. I don't know how much awareness there is in the community about this effort, and to give you that chance to just key us in a little bit to what you're doing there.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Thank you. So maybe the way to start out for the audience, too, is to mention that the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund has a website. And if you Google up Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, it'll probably be the top one to pop up, or it's Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, one word, .org. And there's a lot of information on that website. The project is reflecting on the many years of groundfish landings that sustained our harbor were in rapid decline in the mid-2000s, and we had a realization that to be able to sustain our infrastructure here, we were going to have to support somehow or restore some of the groundfish landings that historically had been here. Many of you remember there's millions of pounds were landed, and when we had 3, 4, or 5 processors on the waterfront every year, and it got to a low of in 2007, I think, of approximately total landing ex vessel value in Morro Bay was about $2 million for the value for all the landings, and we felt that here in the community and in managing the harbor, as many of our traditional marine dependent infrastructure businesses had declined or left, and very few processors, versus only small processing was left here in the harbor. So we have worked as a city since 2007, 2008, with the Nature Conservancy, who purchased a number of groundfish trawl permits in 2005 to try to, with the ultimate goal of putting those permits back to work in the community, which we did in first phase with the exempted fishing permit granted from the Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and now into this phase, finally, where we hopefully will, well, what we've done is we've formed this nonprofit called the Morro Bay Community Quota Fund, and it will acquire groundfish privileges in the West Coast Trawl Program. Primary target is to acquire the Nature Conservancy's permits and quota share that they historically, the 6 permits. Board meeting, there is 7 member board. It's a broad-based community, reflective of the community, and I guess it's okay to mention that Andrea Luker has agreed to be a member of the board, not representing the city necessarily. The bylaws are suggests that one board member should always be from a local agency that has involvement with coastal issues or fisheries backgrounds, and Andrea agreed to be the first board member to sort of fill that slot. There's 2 academic members, including Dean Wendt from Cal Poly, of the board. This is a 7-member board. 2 fishing members, and a conservation member, and a member at large, who is Janice Peters, the ex-mayor of Morro Bay. So, like I said, a broad-based board. We've got a fair amount of work to do to organize ourselves and to complete a loan to make a purchase of this These fishing privileges from Nature Conservancy have the board execute an agreement to acquire the privileges, and then we will next year hopefully enter into leases with local fishermen. So we've got some administrative work to get ourselves organized and get going, but I think we expect we've got it charted out, and I expect we will be up and operating by early next year as an independent nonprofit with a, hopefully a continuing contribution from the city on board, but not as a part of the city.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that update and your work on this.
Thanks.
Thanks. Rick, I might have a couple more questions. Thanks for your work and the information that you just provided, you know, all of you and audience as well. I think it was a great question to see how it would, the nonprofit would be structured in the future. And with that, this seems to be the last grant that would be coming forward through the city. So does that mean that as a 501 nonprofit, you guys would be looking for grant funds, but it wouldn't be necessarily funneled through the city?
Yes.
Would that be correct?
Yes, and there will be revenues that will come in from the leasing to individual fishermen, and we plan to be able to be, the nonprofit can be self-sufficient based on those annual revenues. We will also be seeking grants, though, outside in the larger world as a nonprofit.
Right.
To hopefully build capacity and employee capacity, because it's a pretty skinny operation if we just got to live off the lease revenues.
Right. Okay. And so this being the last grant is just solely because the nonprofit hadn't fully developed to where it is now, and so all the grants had come through the city to get it funded to this point, as I understand it. That's the way you presented it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Anything else?
No, if everyone's good, I'll move to approve AT.
Anything? Any other questions? None? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. A3. I just wanted to pull A3 just to ask our city attorney a couple questions as far as the thanks for putting the report together, first of all, and then all the items that were had recommended, you know, oppose, support, if you could speak to the recommendations for those oppose or support, the particular items that you've laid out for us.
Sure. This is actually quite a monumentous task I undertake, because there's over 2,000 bills when they start out every year, so trying to read through 2,000 is not easy. I take my primary lead from the California League of California Cities when they have the hot bills and tell you what's coming up, and that's where I kind of put my list together of the 100 to 200, but I also keep track of ones that are brought to my attention by members of the public and also from our legislators, and so then I whittle that list down as much as I can. My primary concern and what I'm looking for is the loss of local control. If you look at most of these bills, they're going to be something where they're either putting a mandate on the city without any funding, or they're taking away control. And then the support and oppose comes from that. Most of the opposes are because they're trying to take away city control. And all of these, I would say everyone on this list is at least the same recommendation that's coming from the California League of California Cities. There might be some additional ones that they might not think is as hot as bill, because it might deal with a coastal issue, or it might deal with something that it isn't statewide interest, but it's an interest to us. So that's kind of how I go through them and make that determination.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions? With that, I'd make a motion we approve item A3.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Item A3 is approved. That completes our consent calendar. And with that, why don't we take just a five-minute break, and we'll come right back. Thank you.
And the current status of the water reclamation facility. And we've been adding the items that are new in the bold on your staff report, so I'll bring your attention to the very last two items. The last month or the last 2 weeks since we last reported to you, the public services staff has worked with John Rickenbach Consulting to finalize the contract, and we're very close with that contract. We also had a closed session item this evening to discuss the Rigetti proposal. appraisal that the city has received. And I will let you know that we expect to have a kickoff meeting with John Rickenbach Consulting probably within the next 5 to 10 days. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Luker. And before we have any other questions on that, just wanted to discuss having this go into a every once a month type of item. Right now we're seeing it, you know, every single meeting, and the opportunity to just bring this on the second meeting of the month instead of every meeting, I think we can still keep up to date on everything, and just wanted to have any discussion or comments on that. Turn it over to my left or right. Anybody?
Move my papers out of the way to find my button. Well, what I'm thinking is I'm thinking it's okay to have it simply because then it's in front of us every 2 weeks. I think that if we go to once a month now with all the action that's about to happen in the next 6 or 7 days, once the meetings start to happen with the consultant team, I think it's going to be back on anyway. I would anticipate it would be. So that's just what I'm thinking is we could take it off, you know, for the summer, perhaps. I don't know. But my sense is that if we just keep it on, it just, for me, I know it's great to look at it and say, okay, this is where we stand. So if there is consensus, though, to go to 1 month, then if things could continually be updated on the website, then maybe that would be a good compromise from my perspective. Thanks.
George?
Well, since we always seem to have a lot of things on the agendas, I agree with you completely, Mayor. But I think we could handle this thing once a month. It seems like it gets kind of stagnant when we're doing it as often as we are. So I agree with you.
Any comments to my right? Noah, any comments?
Yeah, Nancy. I'd like to keep it flexible. And I think a way we can achieve that is to have the traditional updates where even if there isn't a lot to do, We do have it on the agenda, but on the off meeting for the second meeting of the month, I'd suggest we at least have it on consent, just so people can access the recent update with the timeline and so on, because I think there will be miscellaneous things that the public will want to know, and it'll be an easy way to keep them abreast of it. And I would definitely encourage you and the city manager, as you're looking at our agendas, to not hesitate to shift that consent item to a regular agenda item for times where we do have some significant updates that we need to discuss, or even just to make sure that we get to announce a very important workshop coming up or an input opportunity for the public.
Okay, thanks. You know, I think we can accommodate that. I think the suggestion of going once a month is we do have a pretty – it is covered pretty well. You know, the option of going, you know, consent – and then taking it to an oral presentation. I think the oral presentations are good myself. But, you know, I do think that considering what we do have on the agenda, you know, thinning out the first meeting of the month and then bringing this back on the second month, I thought would be a good option, but still keep us abreast. I'm certain that anything new that comes up will go straight to the website. So, you know, I feel confident that we're addressing that. And as far as flexibility and do we need to bring something on the agenda, I think we can do that as well. But, you know, it seems like we have support and input as far as, you know, maybe once having it on consent, the other having it on oral. But, you know, I'm good either way. I just think it'd be better managed if we just look to an oral report once a month. And I think actually we can cover everything in that time period. And if, you know, if we need to increase that, you know, we certainly can, be it consent or an oral item, you know, on that first meeting.
May I just suggest we do once a month or as needed? If something comes up, an important event or a workshop or something, we certainly want to be able to have that as an agenda item so we can discuss it.
Any other comments? I would still concur that once a month. I would rather do the once a month than as needed for right now. I think as this starts moving along, we'll be able to make those adjustments. But I would like to move it to once a month, the second the second meeting of the month. And with that, I think that would conclude our report. Does anybody have any other comments on that?
I just had one quick comment, and sorry to not have given you an update or heads up on this, but at this point, I believe we are anticipating the first public workshops managed or orchestrated by the project manager. Was that sometime in August from memory? Do we remember exactly? Tentatively, just so people can start to think, okay, that's when we can plan
Rob's eyebrows are as furrowed as mine, but I'll turn it over to him to see if he remembers.
It's all based on a timeline based on when the contract is actually signed. So I believe they anticipate the meeting with stakeholders 3 weeks within 3 weeks after, and then workshops after that. So I anticipate the contract being signed perhaps tomorrow, and then we would have a kickoff meeting that following week, and then they would start the stakeholder interviews and then setting up the workshops after that. So August would probably be a good time to target. I just want to point out while I have the mic that we have a new Notify Me set up. It's for the water reclamation facility on our website. So if you sign up for that, anytime we add anything to the website or have a meeting, that you'll get an email regarding that. And we will be putting this schedule and timeline on the website. And as things get added to it, you'll be able to track along the website with that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for that. And the one thing I want to end on is I think as we go forward, and it sounds like you're already planning on doing this, but besides listing in these updates, listing what has been done to date, I'd really like to see, as we firm up the schedule, the schedule here as well, so the public can look at that and particularly know when to anticipate being prepared to come out and get involved in public input opportunities.
Definitely.
Thank
All
you.
All right. Thanks.
Mayor.
And with that, we're going to open it up for public comment. Thanks. Yeah. Got a little bit sidetracked there, but this is a business item, and it is open for public comment. For any of those who would like to make comment to item D1 for our water reclamation facility, can do so now. Seeing none, I'd bring it back to council. Thanks for that. Any other comments to item D1? We can close item D1. Seeing none, I'd move on to item D2 and turn it over to Mr. Livick.
Mr. Schultz is going to kick this off, and we're going to kind of tag team approach to this item.
I lost the coin flip, so I'm the one that's going to do the staff report on this one, which is the history and status of the water rights issues in the Chorro Valley. And the staff report was prepared by myself, Rob Livick, and Rick Sauerwein. There's three areas that I'll go over, and those are the water supply history, the Jones, what is known as the Jones complaint, which was a complaint that was filed with the State Water Board over our violations of our permit conditions, and the Chorro Valley water customers and the issues involved with them. As you know, Morro Bay incorporated in 1964, and I'm going to give you a few dates here because it's important to emphasize the dates and how long it takes us to deal with these issues with the State Water Board and the Water Rights Division. So we incorporated in 64. And prior to the incorporation, two water districts under the county served the community. And a member of the public at our last meeting brought forward the resolutions of when those water districts were dissolved, when we incorporated. Those are documents I now have. I've reviewed those, and those are the same documents that we've had in our possession. We know the assets that we obtained from the dissolution of those water districts. At the same time that happened, when we incorporated, we obtained quite a few other, the streets, the wastewater treatment plant collection system. So there was the Embarcadero. So those were documents we have and have had the entire time. In 1972, we filed applications for permits to appropriate waters from the Chorro Valley with the State Water Board, and hearings occurred in 1977. So we filed for the permits in 72. We didn't get a hearing for 5 years later to show how slow it is just to get a hearing in front of the Water Board. And the Water Board said that they do have jurisdiction, and that was some of the issues that were raised with the water district's dissolution and where the cities was and what their rights and responsibilities were in there. And the board ruled in 82, so another 5 years even after the hearings were held in 77, ruled in 82 that the board had jurisdiction over the city and ordered us to prepare an EIR to support our permit applications. And pursuant to that 82 ruling, the city prepared an EIR and submitted that. And in response to that, 5 years later in 87, there was hearings on the EIR and on whether the permits would be granted under what conditions. Its primary source of water, which would before that time our primary source was primary with the Chorro and Morro, but once we flipped that state water switch on, it completely changed our makeup of where we took our water from, and it, from that point forward, primarily came from the state. In 2005, the annual water production in the Chorro Valley started to increase, though significantly due to the diminishing state water project deliveries, and also at the same time we had the limited production for the Morro Valley. So during that time, after we got the state water, we obviously ramped up and used the 1313 from state water, and any remaining water needed was taken first from the Morro and then third from the Chorro. And with the Morro, with the MTB issues, we had to kind of switch that around. So there's been some fluctuations in 2005 during that. During the 2006 state water shutdown, which is the same time we had MTB issues that were finally resolved at that point in time, and we thought we'd now have the Morro wells on, we had a spike in our nitrates, which led us to further issues that required us to substantially reduce the Morro wells and rely furthermore on our Chorro wells during times when the state water project is shut down. So in summary, from 97 to 2006, during the period after the city began getting deliveries of the state water and before the Morro wells were significantly impacted by nitrate contamination, the city substantially reduced diversions from the Chorro wells. Since 2006, reduced deliveries from the state water project and the nitrate contamination of the Morro wells has forced the city back to relying on the Chorro wells. More recently, treatment from the brackish Morro wells, though, and conservation have now kind of switched the tables again, when we're back using primarily the state water, which we'll always use, but now we're back to primarily using the Morro wells back because we've reduced the nitrate contamination. And I think Rob will confirm, in fact, last year we used only 1 acre foot of water of the Chorro, so it's almost not using it at all if we have that reliable source coming from the Morro and we're able to use the brackish wells there and the desal. So in 2009, though, about that time is when we received a complaint from Jones with the State Water Board, and that complaint alleged that we were non-compliance with decision 1633 and the requirements imposed on the city's water well permits for Chorro Valley. Right after that is when we filed legal counsel, outside legal counsel, to help us through these issues and determine what our rights were and where we were with our permit conditions. And we discussed the Jones complaint and took a more aggressive approach on how to come up with a compliance plan on how to come in compliance with all of the conditions set forth in our permits. We've had many discussions, and our outside counsel has, with the Water Rights Division, and has come up with a compliance plan, and that's been accepted by the State Water Rights Division as to actions to ensure that we continue compliance or corrective measures to bring the city into compliance with all our permit conditions. Just this last year, in October 2012, another document was approved, which is the Flow Bypass Compliance Plan, which is a plan which designates where we're going to put our flow bypass meters that requires to monitor the flow, and also where the stream gauge project would go and help us to come into compliance with the terms and conditions of the revised permits. For the first half of the year also, we've been working with the water rights to petition for an extension of time for the Chorro wells. What you do is there's three steps. It's an application process. You obtain your permits, but there's one more past that, which is your license. Your permits allow you to use the water, but until you have a license for the use of that water. You haven't perfected your rights, and they can be taken away from you. So although we have permits for it, it's not absolute until you actually have your license. And what occurred here is a situation where the beneficial use needs to be used out in the Chorro Valley for us to go to license. And we haven't used all of the necessary water because of the state water. And so we need to receive an extension of time for our permits to keep on going on until we reach a level that we've taken beneficial use of that water in the Chorro Valley in order to perfect our permits into license. And that's why the extension was necessary in order to keep that going on. With regards to the customers in the Chorro Valley, so from time to time, since it's incorporation of the city, there's been water meters and water services that have been provided to customers outside our limits. There's currently 9 customers that are on water service outside. We lost our use of those wells because there wasn't enough blending time between when the wells were pumped and when they received the customers out there received them. So at the time those connections were made, though, it wasn't perceived that we'd be in the current situation. The Chorro groundwater basin was considered safe for drinking, and it met all the state and federal regulations governing water quality. However, over the last decade or 2 decades, water quality has deteriorated in the basin, while a number of new federal regulations have come into effect governing water supplies. As I mentioned, because of that degradation of the water quality and changes in regulations, in December of 2008, the California Department of Public Health shut down the wells in the Ashurst area until a reliable method of providing treatment for nitrates removal or blending is in place. Therefore, the city is not able and has not, since that time, used any of the wells in the Chorro Ashurst area. And has used water either from the Romero or from state water. So at no time have the customers been getting water that exceeded the state and federal law, and we're still able to use the Romero because of the length and the blending line from the time the water is treated and when those customers receive it. So we've looked at this issue over and over with staff and with council, the city council. And in September 2028, January 11th and March 22nd, the council has at that time reviewed and analyzed this same type of report on where we were at and provided alternatives to maintain the water sources for both the Romero and the Ashurst wells. And to recap what council has looked at, you know, one of the solutions is to provide a water treatment plant alternative out there, providing point source treatment of the well water provided and produced. Another one would be to install a new pipeline for distribution out there so that the water could first come into our tanks, be treated there, and then go back out to the customers outside the city limits. Another way is to try to work out a non-potable water agreements with each of the city customers that are outside the city limits. And the third is to find a way to disconnect the customers outside the city limits, which is alternative number 4. So from 2010 to 2012, the city did work with the Roanoke and the County of San Luis Obispo and the Chorro Basin to develop a permitting strategy and template for the removal of the systems from the city system. And generally, agreement required the city to provide a well and wellhead and an under treatment system to remove any contaminations if there were any. So we were able to do that with the county. That permit process has been completed with the county. The wellhead has been installed. I will say, though, that there is a dispute between the county and the Coastal Commission on the permitting issue for that, and with conversations with Coastal Commission, the city has stated that, you know, we want to see that issue resolved between the Coastal Commission and county on the permitting jurisdiction and how that process is supposed to partake before we would try to negotiate any other property agreements out in the Chorro Valley. So that's one of the reasons why we haven't been working on it. with the property owners as much as we were from 2009, say, to 2011. The other reason is also is you know, there may be other solutions here if, in fact, the wastewater treatment plant is moving and there's infrastructure that possibility could be out closer to the Chora Valley. There could be other solutions. So it is a very complicated and technical issue. I've tried to give you the layman's term as best I can. Rob and Rick are here to answer any real specific questions on it. From a staff's recommendation is you know, we continue working very closely with the water rights division on our compliance plan. We're in the permitting stage to install those gauges. The permitting, it goes through the county, it goes through Fish and Game, it goes through Army Corps of Engineers. The permitting process is not easy. It has been a long time. I know there's questions of, you know, you received these permits in 1997, and here it is this long, and we still don't have some of the permit gauges installed. I can tell you I was involved in 98 to 2001 and with letters and trying to get answers to some of the questions when the stream was altered, its location, so we weren't sure where to put the stream gauges. And that is it takes quite a bit of time. They say 10 to 20 years from permit to license, and we have to first get done with our permit conditions before we can even ask to go to license, which is getting the stream gauges installed so we can measure the flow. I know that's a lot in a short period of time. Like I said, I tried to give you a thumbnail of it. We're here to ask any other specific questions, or if you want us to do more, let us know. If you want more in depth, we can provide that. And I'll turn it back to you or to Rob and to Rick for any other additional information.
Thanks for that report, Rob. It's we've got a couple other. You've got quite a lengthy report as well. Is that correct?
No. Mr. Schultz basically gave the overview of the report. We're here to answer technical, civil, engineering type questions. I just want to add that received a schedule from our design consultant that's working on the gauges, and they anticipate construction complete on the stream gauges October of next year is when they would anticipate construction complete based on a timely response on the permits.
Okay. We will be opening this up for public comment. As far as questions from council, I think it might be, are you done with any other?
I don't have anything to add at this point unless you have questions.
At this point, we can open up to public comment and then bring it back to council for more questions. We'd be open up for public comment. Anybody who would like to speak to the item D2 would be the history and status of our water issues in the Chora Valley. You can do so now. Please come up, state your name, and you have 3 minutes. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to council. I'll look to my left. George, do you have anything?
Well, it seems like Rob's got a pretty good hand on this. I mean, that's a lot for us to chew. You didn't talk anything about the Kerry Burton situation. Is
Miss Burton is one of the property owners in the Chora Valley, and based on council's last direction and what I've just repeated in an email to her and her attorney is that this direction from the council is that there will be no shutoff of any water on any of the Chora Valley property owners until an agreement for alternative water is obtained. I guess there was confusion as whether if someone out there sold their property or whether they rented it, whether the city would take the position that the new property owner or the person who rented wouldn't be entitled to water, and that's not the case. So I reiterated that we would not deny water to any new property owner or any new renter until an agreement was reached. The one caveat is that, and that's what happened in the other property that was out there, is if the property is shut off because of non-payment or there is no one on the water account, then it's city's position then that all previous agreements or any resolutions have been terminated, and we don't have to provide water to the new customer. And that's what happened with the foreclosure. The property went into foreclosure. The water was terminated for quite a period of time. We removed the water meter, and that property owner had to find alternative water sources on their own, which they were capable, they were able to do through the county and install a well and have property with water being delivered, but not from the city. So for Carrie Burton's situation, we're still working. That's one of the property owners that we would have to obtain a separate agreement with that. We have a proposal, and I'll bring that to you in closed session on real property negotiations at your next meeting and get direction from you.
Thank you for that.
Christine?
I appreciate very much having it come, this report come to council and come to the community. I think it looks like I'm not accurately reflecting how often it's come up, but it seems like perhaps every 2 years or so that comes back to the community and there's an update. And in the course of those 2 years, some of the residents might have found, there might have been a solution found. So just so I'm clear, how many folks right now are we delivering water to? Exactly how many?
Nine.
Okay, so it's nine are getting the water. Okay. And then some things moving forward that are up in the air are, what's our location, perhaps?
Making certain that the permitting conditions between the Coastal Commission and county are resolved. There's no reason to go down a path of, unless those two agencies are in agreement as to what permits are needed and the correct procedure to make sure that when, if we do terminate service through an agreement with a customer, that they have a reliable source of water also with the correct permits. So I think that needs to be resolved. And also I think we, like I said, there could be a different solution than that, than the previous 9 or 10. And maybe that was fueled by the Jones complaint, but at least I, you know, keeping on track now and I think staff-wise, you know, during that 2001 to 2009 period, we didn't even have a engineer on staff. We didn't even have there was a period there we didn't even have an outside engineer. And so that's really helped that we've got capable staff on board. I think Rob took over in 2009.
As director in 10, as city engineer in 7.
And, you know, from 8 to now is when we've really made progress, and I think that's because of the staff over there.
No.
Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. I do want to start with just one question, and I sent it to you earlier. It's mostly for the public's information about outside counsel that we've utilized, and if you could update us on those costs to date and then what you see with the outside counsel going forward.
Since 2009, we've spent approximately $140,000 on outside counsel, so that's approximately, you know, $25,000, I think, a year, if my math's right. It's not even close to that in the last year or so. Most of it was at the very beginning when the compliance plan and Biflow were being trying to negotiate it. But certainly we need to keep them on until we're much further down and get everything in line. But I think it'll taper off quite a bit. But I can't give you an estimate as to how much will be spent and how long it'll take us to get through. We keep costs down. We try to do as much as we can ourselves. But a lot of this has to do with getting a response. For example, we filed our petitions to extend the time. Someone has to follow up with that with staff at the water board, and they're in Sacramento. They can walk over there. They can get into the offices, and they know the people to say is, have you received the city's permit, in their petitions? You know, do you have any questions? Where is it? Do they need to do anything more? I think that's where we fell behind, is we didn't have that follow-up when we'd write a letter in 2001 or do something and then just assume since we didn't get a response, everything was fine. And so we need to keep them aboard, but we'll keep costs down. It won't be over what we spent per year, and it certainly will be under. And we can report that periodically if you'd like more of an update on a six-month basis or a yearly basis or whatever you'd like.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at, was to make sure the council's kept in the loop, particularly if you see either a continued bulk of what we saw in the past when there was a lot of effort being put into it coming forward, so that we can anticipate that. That was in part one of the reasons why I was interested in our budget updates, to have the consultant costs laid out for all of our consultant costs, just to help us track that a little more.
And for certain issues that if there would be a big jump, and I'll just a little nuances is so one of our questions that has really been plaguing us is that our permit conditions actually say we're not allowed to provide water outside our city limits. So we are, according to the State Water Division, in violation of that permit condition. My response to that and our outside counsel's response to that is our permit conditions were in 1995, and these water services were before that. So they predate and are grandfathered in and are not in violation of our permit conditions. We haven't installed any new customers, so therefore we're not in it. And then there is another issue regarding whether former water districts were there, and therefore we had the ability to provide that water outside our city limits. So we have arguments that show that we're not in violation of the permit condition. Water staff disagrees, but they're also not pushing that issue. But they did ask us if we wanted to, well, why don't you just amend your permit condition to allow you to do that, and that would resolve that. And the problem with that is when you do an amendment of a permit, you open up your whole permit to new hearings, and probably new environmental review, and who knows what else, which then your outside counsel costs could escalate tremendously. And so if that decision ever would be made, that's certainly something I'd come to you and say, okay, this is where our counsel is telling us where we need to head, as opposed to just the petition for the extension doesn't require a hearing. It's granted administratively, and there are no extra environmental documents done. So for anything that is a deviation, a major change in policy, or is going to require extensive time, then it will come to you.
Okay, thanks for that. A couple other comments that I have. One is we did hear from the Astro Astria program last meeting in regards to their efforts to work in the Chorro Valley to improve the basin and the aquifer out there and the water quantity. And really, I'm happy with the presentation. I think it's very important for us to respect the 1633 order from here on out looking forward, and to continue with the stream gauge work and make sure that we get those installed so we can start to get that data. And, of course, continue with the water delivery commitments, which takes a lot of pressure and anxiety off of our current partners out there. And you know, it's a commitment that is challenging for us, but it's something that we have to honor. So I think we need to continue with that direction. And at the same time, be prepared for an emergency permit if it turns out we need to go there. And recognize that the good of the rest of the city depends on, at times, potentially needing to utilize the water in a larger way out there with interruptions to state water. So that's one of the key things that's jumped out to me about this whole scenario, is that the state water has been a blessing, but it's also in some ways caused us to lose track of our local sources. I'm thinking historically back to what brought us to this point. And now we're trying to work our way back to try to revitalize those local sources. And it's particularly important because we hear a lot about the unknowns of the future of state water. And that could include a major renovation of the state water project, and therefore extremely different costs that we might need to take on if we want to continue to participate at our current level. And then, of course, not only the planned interruptions to state water, but the emergency potential. And it, to me, is just a good reminder that we should be working very hard to try to be a self-sufficient locally. And this work is critical for us to get there. And I totally agree that there may be some exciting developments with the water reclamation facility that could help us facilitate a better arrangement with the Chorro Valley and the aquifer. So I'm definitely comfortable with the staff's recommendation of moving forward carefully. I think it's important that we do stay in touch with the county and coastal, and again, work with the estuary program to look at some other options there for stewardship and water budgeting. And I would say to close that I'd like to involve the Public Works Advisory Board more in this, and to utilize them as a good sounding board as updates become timely, and I think they could help us overall with community awareness and may present some new ideas that we haven't thought of and give the community a chance to get more in depth. So, you know, we have a lot of business to take care of, and if there are things that need to get deeper, specific issues, I think the Public Works Advisory Board would be an excellent place to work that through.
Thanks for that, Noah. I totally agree with you on the PWAB board and having, you know, their having this item going through that board. I think there's some talent there and have an opportunity to, as you say, you know, bring it more attention to the public. And so I'd agree with you on that completely. Rob, thank you for the report. Very, very thorough. I think you have some more questions. Just a minute in that. You know, I did want to speak to the staff report in regard to, you know, the addendum and the letter email to Ms. Steggy. And, you know, I know we talked about that. Your presentation was, you know, great. I appreciate that. I would just hope in the future that, you know, for people who are viewing this memorandum that, you know, it's not viewed as a deterrent to provide your input on any matter whatsoever. So I just wanted to address that, you know, publicly in regard to that, and that probably in the future we'd probably sum it up more into a summary type presentation instead of this email type of format. But nonetheless, it was a great report. Thank you for that. You know, to back up on some of the comments, I think, you know, I'd agree. I think when we consider what our state water supply is. Recently, I looked up some of those statistics. So we've got 25 million customers in the state of California that are supplied water through our state water project, over 700 miles of aqueduct and piping. You know, it's a huge undertaking, and you know, it's quite an accomplishment, really, engineering-wise, which, Mr. Livick, I'm sure that's great. But, you know, back to what we have here and looking at some of the data in our report, considering we, you know, at one point in the Chora Valley, we drew so much out of that as a water source. So I think, you know, moving forward on how we can reuse that in many different ways, but, you know, I think we're working forward with the stream gauge, to which I have a question for you here in a minute. But, you know, so far we just need to, and we were drawing 258 acre feet through our RO, our desal unit. So maybe you can speak to that in a minute. But, I think, you know, moving forward and making sure what our portfolio of water is, we need to protect that and make sure that if there's any way we can enhance that. And that's what we should be thinking about. So maybe you might want to respond.
In regards to the Chora Valley, some of our limitations there are not just the quality of the water, but the quantity of the water. Mm-hmm. So we need to maintain 1.4 CFS, you know, downstream of our well fields before we can withdraw. That's the point of the stream gauges. Mm-hmm. So right now what we're doing is we're monitoring on a frequent basis. Weekly we go out there, our hydrogeologic consultants measure stream flow at a temporary gauge. And, for example, today I got a report. It's at 0.91 CFS downstream of our well field. So right now we would not be allowed to withdraw water from the Chora well fields because we're below that 1.4 CFS. In addition to that, there is periodically elevated nitrates in that Chora Valley. So the way we treat those nitrates is bring them into our water system, blend them with the other sources of supply until they're down below the maximum allowable contaminant level. In this case, dilution is the solution mm-hmm. to pollution here, is how we're treating that water. And it is an allowed treatment method. Kind of the next step in our gauges is the permitting process that we're going to be going through. And that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit. Not only through the county, but here in the city of Morro Bay. We are the lead agency on this project. Therefore, we have to take action on the environmental document. So our planning commission will be reviewing that environmental document. It might be a perfect opportunity for our Public Works Advisory Board before we bring it to planning commission to have, whether it's a regular meeting or because of our bi-monthly meetings, hold a special meeting so that we have an opportunity to bring that before our Public Works Advisory Board and give them details about the installation and some of the environmental issues with installing those gauges.
Great.
You had another point about the desal plant, whether we can still supply. Most of that water that's coming out of the RO plant is treated brackish water from the Morrow Basin. We haven't run our salt water well since 97-ish, probably, 99 maybe.
Okay.
So we're treating brackish water through there. We've recently had installed some more efficient membranes to that don't require as much energy to pump the water through for that brackish water since we're not treating salt water. In the process of working with Coastal on our wastewater treatment plant, we discovered that the outfall and the salt water wells had an expiring permit on them. We had a professional agreement with Coastal that we'll handle one major issue at a time. We'll get beyond the wastewater treatment plant issue and then tackle the desal issue. So we've submitted a permit application to Coastal. They've come back with some additional information required. We're compiling that information to give them. All that said, can we physically still produce 250 acre feet a year? Yes, we could probably produce more than that. Do we have the permits to use that outfall? No, we don't. If, in the case of emergency, my recommendation would be to advise Coastal that we are going to use that outfall and provide safe and adequate water supply to the community.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and on top of that, because I think Councilman Smuckley brought up really the heart of it, really, if you look at the history of it, is that, you know, once we became, started getting state water in 1997, you know, we worked on these permit conditions. We made a really good effort till 2001, and then it became very difficult with this entire stream channel being changed without getting responses. The reaction was, is state water is really reliable. These conditions are impossible to meet. And it just wasn't worked on for a while. But now in, you know, 2008, we certainly realized that state water isn't as reliable, that we've got to find the ability to get these permit conditions met so that we can have that reliable source of the water. And that's the path we're on. I would say one of the things we've worked out, which goes with the emergency situation, if there was an emergency situation where, in fact, the Choro was needed just as, you know, they would balance on which source to use if, in fact, state.
Sent it as background information, and that way they could ask questions. I don't think they've been involved in this issue before, so it might be good to present all this information to them and give them the opportunity to ask similar questions that council is asking.
Sure.
Or maybe they'd have different ones that might trigger
there
some
might
additional
be.
Thought.
Yeah, exactly. Any other comments from council?
I just had one follow-up question to the situation with the Coastal Commission and the county. Are we hearing from them? Are they letting us know? Or are we reaching out to stay abreast of what's happening?
We get CC'd on their correspondence. What the issue is, the county believes that a well permit is sufficient. The Coastal Commission believes that a coastal development permit's required. County Council has responded to Coastal Commission staff. I think they're kind of at loggerheads right now, unless Rob has.
I think Coastal Commission staff would send it up to their legal counsel, and they were going to respond to county. So, and see if they can work it out. And when we'll bring it up, and at least in our quarter meeting with Coastal Commission staff, we did our last one in April, is you know, where is this at? And please work on it and get to a conclusion so that we all know what permits and what the procedure and process is going to be for the applicants.
Okay, so we're certainly in the loop for that. We're not missing the critical information. Okay, and then I think one other thing moving forward for direction is just to keep the council abreast of the outside council cost. If there's a spike in something, just to come back and let us know about that.
So that would be able to see that in our yearly update on this?
I can do it every 6 months.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I've requested to Ms. Slayton that she includes that summary of all consultant costs in the mid-year and the end-of-year budget reports.
Good. Any other comments? So we're pretty clear. We are moving forward. We'll have a yearly update on this. If there's, I think we're addressed on the consultant costs. Anything else?
Did we want to confirm that we would like to have initial conversations with the ESTRE program about participating in their project?
Yeah, we do. We want to make sure that that's part of this as well. Seeing no more comments, we can close item D2 and move on to item D3. Thanks for that report. All right, Mr. Livick.
Item D3 is one that's been a year in the waiting. The Public Works Advisory Board took action on this item in May of 2012, and they recommended, I think in their staff report it was 15 trees, but we discovered that we had made an addition error. It's actually 20 trees at 10 locations. Some of them are small groves of trees, other single trees, to add to the landmark tree list, and actually not add to it, but create the landmark tree list. These would be the first 20 trees on the landmark tree list. Back in, prior to the Planning Commission action, City Council modified the Municipal Code section 12.08, a couple different sections in there that added the provision to recognize landmark trees within the right-of-way. And they recognize that these landmark trees will be protected and proactively maintained for the life and health of the, under my authority. Subsequent to that, the maintenance of tree maintenance has moved to our maintenance, combined maintenance division, so we would be providing technical assistance to our maintenance folks to help them maintain the trees. And that the nominee would, at their expense, prepare a sign or a plaque that would be recognize those trees or groves of trees. The Citizens Tree Committee worked amongst themselves in coming up with a list of some trees. And I've gotten myself in a quandary with my, with my iPad. I can move forward. There was three or four tree locations that staff made recommendations not to be on the landmark tree list. The first three locations in the attachment from the Citizens Tree Committee.
One comment at this time. Anybody would like to speak to this item, please come forward, state your name, and we'd be happy to hear from you.
Good evening. My name's Nancy Best. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm an inveterate tree hugger. Have always been. I think they're a miracle of nature. I want to congratulate the PWAB and the Tree Committee for doing this. It's a long time coming, and it's certainly something that we have needed to do. I was once on a tree committee that got fired, and this was definitely a part of what we were doing at the time. And I want you to please accept the recommendation. However, I feel the most universally visible and iconic grove of trees in Morro Bay has been overlooked. I would like you to put on the list for consideration for heritage status the venerable and beautiful trees that are on the Jordan Terrace public right-of-way on Cerrito Peak. The public right-of-way there will likely never become a paved roadway. Heritage status will preserve that magical environment for human and other creatures. I hope you consider this. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Public comment is open. Any more for public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. And I'll look to my right this time. Nancy, would you like to have any start off with questions or comments?
I just want to be sure nobody is confused by the choice of terms. At one point it's called heritage trees, and another it's called landmark trees. So I just think it might be best to clarify one or the other, because I want to also be sure that our citizens understand that anybody can nominate a tree or group of trees. And I think I'd like to ask Mr. Livick where they go to nominate a tree.
They can submit it via letter, email, phone call to Public Services Office with the what they believe is the criteria of why it should be, and that's listed in Chapter 12 of the Municipal Code, what types of things that we're looking at for landmark trees. Heritage is one of those characteristics of a landmark tree. Does it meet certain historical, from a historical perspective, is it a something, as was mentioned earlier, the first of the Canary Island palms that were planted? Those are probably a historic recognition, because we have a picture, a little aside, we have a picture of those pines, palms, I don't know why I want to keep calling them pines, when they were about 3 feet tall on the wall of the Public Services Office. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to see what they look like today. Anyway, you would submit that to Public Services Office, that list, or a single tree. With your evaluation, staff would forward that on to our Public Works Advisory Board, who would recommend to City Council whether it be adopted as a landmark tree or recommend that it not be adopted as a landmark tree. So hopefully we can cut down on the amount of time that it takes to get from PWAB to City Council in the future. But we're here now and looking at our first 20 trees.
Okay, I just one more question. In fact, I just wanted to commend you on your chart on page 78 here, and I don't know if that can be available to people, because it really explains very clearly how the process works once you've nominated a tree. The other thing is, so you're telling me a heritage tree or one that has a history in town is then therefore becomes a landmark tree after it's been approved?
Heritage history, historic perspective is one of the criteria for becoming a landmark tree. So it could be a historical tree that may not have any particular arboricultural values, but for example, palms, in some people's views, that they're monocots and have no real value here. But
wow, fancy words.
I know. I learned those from a planner at one point in time. So he had very definite opinions on palms, that they don't belong north of Santa Barbara. So anyway, but those are historic, maybe not meeting, or, you know, they might be historic and be unique specimens of trees.
That question, and Mr. Livick for describing how a citizen or a group could nominate additional trees, and it's pretty well laid out here in Chapter 12.808 of the code. So I just do want to recognize the three tree committee members that really put the the legwork into carrying this forward. The entire volunteer tree committee participated in evaluating the trees and bringing recommendations forward, but really Wally McCrae, Taylor Newton, and Bob Schreiber of Arbor First were the workforce that developed the presentation and staff report that we see here. And I'd suggest to a citizen that's interested to take a look at this as maybe a rough outline of what you might think about putting together for a specific grove or tree that you want to nominate. And this is probably the upper end of what you would want to submit, so maybe not have to go in as much depth as the tree committee did. So it's important to recognize them. And couple other items. One would be, I would hope, and we did have a good conversation earlier about this, that this landmark tree concept would be included in the urban forest management plan and included to also expand the public education and awareness component to the plan, because that was one of the ideas with this, is to take these trees, which are, the designation is very much symbolic, but to take these trees as an opportunity for us to celebrate what trees mean to our community and to help people connect with them further and understand their significance to our quality of life. And I'd really like to see that further vetted in the Urban Forest Management Plan so it's connected there. Do you have any direct comments about that, Mr. Levick?
Just that it will be incorporated into the Urban Forest Management Plan.
Okay, and I did have an opportunity to talk more with the Historical Society, because it is important as we started this effort, and this is a historical effort, as was mentioned during public comment. Our current volunteer tree committee wasn't the first to come up with this idea. We picked it up from recommendations and requests and carried it forward, but we really did start with some really amazing heritage historical literature. And Morro Bay's Yesterdays from Dorothy Gates and Jane Bailey was one of the first places we went, because you can find many of the pictures of the historical plantings, and it's just amazing, like you mentioned, to see what these trees looked like when they were just seedlings and so forth, and to read the story about how the urban forest grew and was further established. So Historical Society plays an important role in this, and we talked about them updating their walking tour of mostly the downtown area, which currently focuses on places and buildings, and they're planning on incorporating our trees now into that for the celebration of the 50th, which something that more the volunteer tree committee wants to be involved with as well. So that is about it, although I would really like to make sure that staff gets the direction to support and assist the Historical Society in the mapping and outreach efforts as they can. I don't want it to be a drop everything type of direction, but I would like to support staff to be involved there. And also, I had a conversation with Mr. Livick and Mr. Woods about evaluating how these landmark trees, we could identify sponsors or some form of sponsorship for the landmark trees to help us, first of all, make sure they're publicly recognized and easily identified, but also to help us cover the additional costs as they may present themselves of care and maintenance. And I think we may find some people that or groups that may be interested in doing that as well. So those are my comments.
Thanks.
And
thanks,
I support
Noah.
The staff recommendation.
All right. Thanks, Noah. Thanks for your work. Turn to my left, George.
Well, I think we should just thank these people for what a wonderful job they've been doing, and to keep it up. And I think what we ought to do now is approve it.
Thank you. I'll turn it over to Christine.
Well, I'll add to that from George. I found a quote, and it is, "Someone sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago." And it's from Warren Buffett. Not someone I would think is an inveterate tree hugger. So clearly there's support on the council for moving forward. I would accept the entire recommendation from the committee and from the staff and say congratulations as well.
Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
I have a before we close, I do have a couple questions for Mr. Livick. And first of all, you know, there is, you know, there's great work that's been done, and on the tree committee, your work on that, the tree committee at large, all the folks that you mentioned, PWAB, they did a great job, so that was great. The question I have for Mr. Livick on in the staff report,
there's that they needed to avoid. Yeah. So they planted rather large trees fairly close together in the downtown, and those can be a maintenance issue. Large trees in an urban environment need a little bit of help. I think that's, you know, why they want to recognize these two silver dollar yucks as opposed to the red gum or the red bud, red flowering yuke next door to it. That these are kind of unique to the Morro Bay Boulevard. I don't see many silver dollar yukes, and we're treading on the very outside of my expertise as far as trees go.
Thanks. I know we're moving on with this. Noah might have a way to reply, but it just, you know, as we recognize, you know, that there are some other problems out there. Noah, you might have to respond on that.
Yeah, and just for the public, so a knowledge, we, Arbor First, Bob Schreiber, he donated his time. He's an arborist locally, donated his time to go ahead, and as we came up with the trees that we felt should warrant nomination, he went out and did an evaluation of each tree, and that's included in the staff report, to make sure that we weren't nominating a tree that was either diseased or had really poor form that would require a lot of additional maintenance. So each one of these that the staff's again recommended has been screened at least by one local arborist.
Great.
And I did have one other thing that I wanted to add.
Okay, because George wants to make a nomination here. Okay.
I do think it's important, too, because we did drop some trees from the list because they weren't in the public right-of-way. Many of them are on public lands.
Okay.
And then we were contacted by a couple of individuals or groups that wanted to nominate voluntarily a tree on private property. So going forward, I think it would be really interesting to consider this as part of our general plan update and to evaluate how we could potentially include more than just the right-of-way trees in this whole program and generally in the forest management plan.
Yeah, and also I think we need to recognize I think one of the public comments we had on the Jordan Terrace right-of-way, hopefully that the information here, it'd be great to see it go through the process and see if that is a nomination that can work through the process. So, Nancy, you had some comments?
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm thrilled that number 10, our avocado tree in the new pocket park on Shasta and Dunes, is one of them, and that maybe someday the other beautiful fruit trees we've planted in there can also be considered landmark trees, first fruit trees in a city park.
Thanks for that. George?
I thought this was little thing they did the other day with these trees was just temporary.
No.
It wasn't.
Forget it.
Oh, okay. I thought there was a future use for that.
Any motions for this item?
Yes, I will move to approve with the comments made. Move to approve the nominations as suggested by city staff.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Let's move on to item D4. Mr. Endersby.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Well, we won't have any discussion of monocots, whatever those are. We do have a discussion and direction on future expiring leases and consideration of proposals received for lease sites 30W through 33W, which is Coakley Bayfront Marina, 34W, which is Chrysler, 35, 36W, which is currently vacant, and 37W, which is the Meyer lease, Morro Bay Marina, more commonly known as. I'm going to throw a couple of, if I can get AGP out here to help me with that machine, I'm going to put a couple overheads because, as a couple council people pointed out, I did not get maps into this staff report and probably should have, so I apologize for that. Go to there. So what you're going to see here first is just our drawn lease surveys as drawn back in the 70s by our consultant way back when we did that. If you can flip it over, give it a 180. So at the top end is 30 through 33. That's the Meyer property with a boat yard adjacent to it to the left on land. So that's kind of the basic overview of it. I'll just leave that up there. I guess we can switch it out if you need to see the actual maps, but we'll start with that. So as you know, these are water-only leases. South of Tidelands Park, we do not control the property. They're water leases only. That property, you know, those lands down there were never created, quote-unquote, by the military when the harbor was built. The harbor common waterfront that we speak of was built. So those were water-only leases. They're a kind of a unique area. Like I say, we don't own the water, or we don't own the land. We only own the water. So they've typically gone with the landowner in the past. Very few instances where we've had a non-landowner be the water owner as well there. All these leases, I think the staff report, I'll try and do some summary here and not repeat too much in the staff report, but all these leases are up for expiration within about the next 5 years. So that window of any sort of consolidation or consider them all in a whole is now, I think, historically. If we're going to look at combining them in any way, shape, or form under one lease manager or under multiple lease managers, but fewer than the number of adjacent land sites, now's the time. I think it's going to be the only time, and at least probably in my tenure here and maybe in our lifetimes, to be able to do that. Because if we do 10, 20, 30-year leases, assuming they're on different terms, they'll probably never line up again. The last council, we brought this to the last city council, I think last September, August or September last year, for consideration. We had one proposal from Bill Martini regarding his water in front of his property there, fairly similar to what he's proposing now, but slightly different. And then the other leases were just what do you want to do with them? And that council deferred to this city council just because it's a pretty big decision to be made. There's a lot of things at play, and they didn't want to potentially make some decisions that might get turned around or changed or go in a different direction with the new council. So they wisely deferred it to the new city council. And then, more historically, we used to bring a fair amount of this stuff to closed session in our new way of doing things, starting earlier this year, where we're bringing these bigger decisions to open session for the public to weigh in and for the city council to weigh in a public forum. We're kind of, I won't say starting over and starting at square one, but we're getting close to square one, kind of bringing it all back to you folks to get your take on it in a more broad sense. For the leases we have here, all the upland property owners, with the exception of the one lease site where there is no upland property owner that has the lease in front, we've got proposals from everybody down there. The proposal summaries, as I have in the staff report, starting at the south end, which is, for some reason, I don't know why, our leases started getting numbered at the south end and then working to higher numbers as they went north. I always think north to south, but our numbering's backwards in that regard. For 30 to 33, we've received one proposal from Jay and Merlene Coakley, the current upland property owners, consisting of basically operating the site as is with some upgrades to some of the facilities. 34W next to the north, the Kreiser lease site. Bob Kreiser, the owner of that lease, is not the upland property owner. The current upland property owner is Bill Martoni. That lease site, we've received two proposals for operating, one from Mr. Kreiser for continuation and some upgrades as well, and then one from the Martinis next door that do own both that upland property and then the vacant lease site property above to the north. Lease site 3536, Two proposals received for that, one for Bill Martini for operating a small mariculture facility out front, and then one proposal from the Meyer family, which is the adjacent property owner to the north. And then on 37W, the most northerly lease site, one proposal from the Meyer family to basically operate those slips as is with some upgrades, some modest upgrades. So the alternatives out there, like I say, is you know, what we're really looking for is the discussion and to direct staff on which direction we want to go, whether we want to work with the existing leaseholders to continue on, a little bit of a different mix with the Chrysler property, he being not the landowner. And then we've got a couple of folks that have proposed sort of some multiple lease site management as opposed to just right in front of their own properties. And then do we want to combine these lease sites in any way, shape, or form under multiple or more single lease holders? Or do we want to combine them in a way that the city tries to take over some of them and get rid of some of the problems associated with not being the landowner, access and control of the land? And those would be, you know, various methodologies in terms of coming in from the south through Bayshore Bluffs Park and the Oyster Cove beach there immediately to the south, or coming through from the launch ramp area from our public slips, our commercial fishing boat slips there to the north. Predict what it would be other than hopefully positive. And with that, I am more than happy to answer questions, put more maps up, or give you any other information you're looking for.
At this point, we can ask questions for Mr. Endersby. We do have applicants out there that are going to be, I think we want to have them come up and present as well. I think it might be prudent to have the applicants come up and do their presentation, and then we can come back and make our comments, and all, in addition to public comment following their presentation. So as far as the applicants, I'd leave it up to you. Who would like to come up and speak first as an applicant for this?
Name is Jay Coakley, 201 Main Street, or lease site 33.
Mr. Coakley, yes. Just want to, as far as time-wise go, do you think you'd be able to do this in about 5 minutes so we can get all the applicants through?
Yeah, I'll try to hurry up. I could talk all night. First, I want to thank Rob and Eric. They've done a very good job, especially Rob. We've been dealing with him for 10 years. I want to start off, you know, Eric was kind of vague on this. Now, in 1947, when the state of California turned the lease sites over to the county, their bylaws said that south of Tidelands Park, because you have upland owners, they are to lease to the upland owner if they're a good renter. Now, as far as I'm concerned, on our lease site, we're a good renter. And I think the Myers is a very good renter. Now, he runs a very clean operation. And I also believe if you guys try to lump them all together, you're going to have the town come down on you. Can you imagine a parking lot in front of those condominiums? They're not going to want to see that. Or parking in the where the other fishing boats park. I'm talking about parking cars. They're not going to want to. I believe they're not going to want to see parking lots there. Plus, you're going to have to get a coastal permit, and that's going to be very hard because upland owners do own called editorial rights. And it's like Rob talked about earlier, when you're talking water rights, you're talking a can of worms. And luckily, the laws for the last 10 years have been in favor of the upland owner. So you can sit there and say, yeah, we want to take over the lease sites and combine one big marina, but you could be looking at a lot of problems doing that. It's not going to be quite that easy, in my opinion, and the state of California. And even if you did take over all the lease sites at one time, your income's not going to be any higher. We're all paying quite a bit of rent as it is. So what's the advantage of having one owner taking over all the leases? Now, if you had a lot of complaints from the neighbors, I can see that, but I don't believe you're getting any complaints. Now, for our lease site, we're asking for quite a long term because the way our county lease reads, at the end of our lease, which is January, if we leave the pier there, you guys own it. On your new lease, it's going to be the opposite. You're going to say, when our lease runs out, you can order us to remove the pier. So, you know, you're looking at $100,000 we moved the pier. What we're willing to do on the new lease is do the maintenance, you know, keep the pier going. And then, like I said, you're probably at the end of our lease is going to ask us to remove the pier, and that's going to be expensive. When Rick Algert was harbor director, we were working out a deal where we removed the pier, and the city takes it out on the rent because he realized, yes, the city's going to own the pier. So, and yeah, that's why we're asking for a long-term lease. Now, I wouldn't mind shortening the lease if you want to take the responsibility of the pier at the end of the lease. And that would be fine with us. You know, if you want to do the same way our lease reads right now. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, Mayor and Council. My name is Bob Kreiser, and I hold the lease for lease site 34W. There's two issues going on here. One, I hold a lease site that's not contiguous to upland property. That came about as a result of being a partner with the person that did own the upland property at one point, and he wound up assigning that lease to us. In that process, we went through creating easements both for site access and the use of bathroom facilities, water, and power. All these easements went through the city attorney, Rob, and he looked them over. He had me rework a couple of details to be sure that it maintained access to this lease site for the leaseholders and the people that rent their slips into at least for the duration of the lease. So there's a few issues that have been brought up regarding access by the comments regarding walkways have little merit and are incorrect. There's quite a few. There's a long discussion to be had about that, but they have little merit. My proposal is a lease renewal based on, well, first, it's my understanding that lease renewals are based on good stewardship of the lease site. And I believe records will show that I've met the requirements of the general guidelines for renewal of lease sites. A secondhand quote from one of my slip renters, this quote was made by the harbor director. Mr. Kreiser is one of the few master leaseholders that has met all conditions of his lease on time. Okay, that's just a little support for me to be able to ask for an extension. General maintenance. Everybody's responsible for general maintenance of a lease. I continue to maintain my lease sites as needs arise. I've currently replaced dock floats. I have two more to replace in the near future. They're on site. I've also recently replaced a couple of rotten timbers, have upgraded fire suppression container, and smaller items. I have a plan on maintaining a maintenance effort for three pilings that are beginning to wear. It's all part of holding a lease, is to maintain your site. My methods of maintaining or repairing the above will create a well-maintained and a sound lease site. Now, those will be methods that I have to use because of the economics. I'm going to have to maintain and repair. Best practices would allow me to provide new structure and improve. And that's what I'm asking for the council to consider is a automatic extension of my lease once I complete some improvements that I have listed in my letter to the harbor director. This really came about, the potential to do the improvements and make the financial commitment came about as a result of being invited to some informal meetings by the harbor director and his staff requesting the leaseholders of this area to step forward if they had a proposal that they wanted to submit. So at that point I decided, okay, well, I could continue the maintenance as usual, or I could ask for a guaranteed extension if I completed certain improvements by the time I finished my lease agreement. It's going to be expensive to do these guaranteed improvements, to do these improvements, and so I couldn't financially budget for that unless I knew that there was an extension coming to my lease.
I'm going to have to ask you to conclude in a minute.
Sure, I'm right there. Yeah. And so without the consent conditional automatic extension, I couldn't afford it. And so that really concludes my support, my request for the 34W extension.
Thank you, Mr. Kreiser.
Good evening again, Bill Martini. And we did write, when you requested proposals for lease sites, we did submit a letter on lease site 34W, the one that's out in front of my property, Gladys Walton's, the lighthouse property that we purchased a few years ago. And then also a lease site 3536W in front of the cannery property. I'll go real briefly on 34W, why I don't believe the lease should be extended and it should really return to the land. Number one, the document is defective. Our attorney believes that. In fact, Rob Schultz was in our attorney's office when he said, "Have you seen this document? It looks squirrely to me." And our attorney actually looked at it and found flaws in it. That aside, that water lease site was always attached to the land. There's provisions, even if that document was solid as far as the restrooms, they haven't been maintained lately. I've showed Christine the restrooms a few weeks ago. I showed Noah yesterday. They're a mess. They're going to be locked because they haven't been maintained. As a upland property owner, we would maintain, we would actually replace the piles. The failing walkway, as far as it's been failing, it's been tried to be fixed a couple times. It needs to be fixed again, and it has to actually be engineered this time. It was never properly engineered. That aside, it just makes common sense with there's a parking issue. The property at 225 Main Street has 5 parking spaces at 206 Main Street. There's a recorded city document that states that. It's exclusive for 225 Main Street. I know there's a dispute with the city, but we do have the parking rights. So the parking rights would be available, easement, utilities, offsite. So it would really make sense to go forward with our agricultural proposal. On the staff report, it states that we're going to do a small dock out in front. Actually, the side tide floating dock is 120 foot long. This is almost the size of Tidelands Park. It has 240 feet. We can accommodate up to 240 running feet of side tide boat. It's not primarily designed to side tide boats, but we're talking research marine research vessels we can accommodate. We can accommodate work boats. It has multiple uses. We plan to use it for mariculture, but it doesn't haul have to be solely dedicated to mariculture. It can be used for multiple uses. So that, I just wanted to make that point. We're talking 240 feet of side tide floating facilities, which is huge. And as far as the lease sites, I just want to make one point. This is not a complicated area. As long as the upland property owners are leasing the lease sites, and all 4 upland property owners are offering to lease the water lease sites out in front of them, problem solved. If you start mixing and matching and doing outside people and trying to come in via Tidelands Park or to the south or the city manage it, yeah, you're going to create a can of worms. So as long as staff leaves everything alone and the upland owners take care of the lease sites, it's simple. It's always worked. It always will. So that's what my recommendation is just to lease to the upland property owners. You have 3 existing leases that work fine, and the mariculture should work fine, and the neighbors seem happy with it. So thank you.
Thank you, Bill. At this point, it's public comment is open.
Good evening again, Nancy.
I think we had Meyer at the Coakley, and sorry, a little housekeeping here.
Go ahead.
We did Meyer was part of Coakley.
We didn't. Meyer's not here. Okay.
Meyer's not here.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Excuse me, Nancy. Go ahead.
Nancy Bass, Morro Bay. Is it appropriate for me to make a general comment on lease sites, or does it have to be specifically for these?
At this time, it's you have 3 minutes to comment on any item on this on D3 on excuse me D4.
Okay, this would be about the general policy of the city. The issue has always been highly of interest to me because of the closed-door negotiations regarding some sites and the fact that the city's almost entire promotions expenditures are aimed at waterfront and associated businesses, primarily motels and hotels. In the past, struggling uptown businesses that were able to relocate to the Embarcadero became successful. One of my concerns has been that the city be compensated accordingly for the residents' promo monies that go into that success. When I moved to Morro Bay 33 years ago, the Embarcadero was made up of many individual businesses and had a greater diversity of interests. For better or for worse, it was definitely quainter. Then a direction toward consolidation of lease sites to enable bigger, better development began with the allowing of an entire block of lease sites to be bought up to become one, Marina Square. When Bill Yates became mayor, then Harbor Director Algert began promoting the concept of consolidation and his, quote, "we need to do something for our good old families," unquote, attitude became the favoring of the League's Tognazzinis and Van Beerdens to acquire multiple lease sites. In the past, primary ownership of lease sites enabled leasees to sublease without the certification of the city and caused the city revenue loss in one case when the subleasee defaulted and another when the city, along with the primary leasee, were sued in a liability case. Financial certification of subleases by the city became required. Is that still the case? I mention about primary and secondary leaseholders because I feel it enables the primary leasee to potentially profiteer on public land that is entrusted to the city by the state to be used for the highest and best interest of the people of California. I feel that lease sites should be kept separate, and one entity should not be able to lease multiple sites in the interest of diversity and innovation. What is this council's policy concerning consolidation and the accumulation of lease sites by the same people? How widely and where are waterfront and lease sites advertised to maximize the most and diverse response? What basis
is beneficial? And so you have four different problems here. One with not owning the land with adjacent to the water lease is a very difficult one. That one I don't know how to solve, but it's pretty obvious the other three are that the property owner, the people who own the property immediately adjacent to the water lease, they can do the best job. They can provide public services. You have fire, be able to get a fire truck down there. You can actually run a business. And Morro Bay is, we were just hearing earlier how the fish landings have dropped off so dramatically. Well, I know that there are other, whereas up the coast we have someone growing abalone, and that abalone farm is just doing fabulously. The economics, if we had that abalone farm in our city, the tax revenue would just be monstrous. So I urge you to look at alternative uses rather than boat slips. Boat slips are wonderful, but if you look at the number of boaters that we have, they're dropping. I was a boater for years, and the prices of boats reflect the interest. And right now, the prices are just dropping because there just aren't very many people who are really interested in it. So we need to look to what the public wants. The public is in, there are some active boaters. I've sailed the Transpac. I know about sailing. I love boating. But the city needs industry, and I think that the growing what we can in our harbor is the way we need to look for the future. And I really urge you to take a fresh idea. Let the people who have the land there, who are interested in it, who are devoted, who have been trying to bring something new to the city, give them the opportunity. If you don't give them the opportunity, I think you've missed an awful chance.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Bernadette Pekarek and owner of the Cannery property. And there's just a couple of comments I'd like to make. We have the fire access that we can accommodate fire access to that whole area. The lease site 34 does not have fire access. He has a water hose for fire. If there were a fire, we're all, it's huge liability to all of our properties down there. And I wanted to call that to your attention. Fire access is extremely important to all of the marinas down there. And for lease site 34 not to have that is really wrong.
Thank you. Public comment still open. Should anybody wish to proceed? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. We do have the opportunity to ask the applicants back up should we have any questions. Also, in doing so procedural-wise, I think that does open it up for public comment as well. So just a reminder there, if we have any questions for our applicants that are here, we'd be free to do that. At this point, we can start off with questions. Seems like we have some discussion here, whether or not we combine, consolidate. There's another question I might have for Mr. Schultz on do we really have, a legal issue that would preclude us from, discussing 34, considering some of the comments from the applicants as far as parking access, some of the work that's going on there. So I just wanted to ask that ahead of time before we start going down the discussion with 34.
There certainly is a disagreement on the legality of different documents between the city and the Martinis. I'm not willing or going to discuss that in open session because it is a legal issue. So, I mean, that's something we can discuss in closed session and the legal ramifications of the easement documents.
Yeah. And, so that's kind of my question.
And the power of attorney associated with that and the parking and all the issues you've heard. But there is certainly a disagreement as to the legality of those documents.
And speaking of which, that just kind of brings me back to, how far we go into discussion on where we want to go with 34 without having that discussion in closed session. So I'm throwing that out there and talking with you about that and the rest of council on where we would go with that.
And that might be one then that you set aside until we discuss those.
Yeah. I'll look for questions. Who wants to start it off on this? I'll look to my left on that. Looks like George.
I just want to ask a question. One thing about I feel like we should have had this thing in closed session before we came to open session on here because of questions like this, legal questions. We got a lot of legal things that's going to be going on here. I don't know why.
As to the terms of that lease, that's something we'll discuss in closed session.
Thanks for that. Christine?
No.
Okay.
We're doing it backwards.
Well, I think it is. I think what Councilman League is maybe reflecting on is that this is a change in the system. So that's clear to everyone that this is a whole new way of doing it. Okay. So I just had a few questions, and I don't think they're legal. I don't think they're legal questions. They just come from the documents that are on the staff report, and they are city documents. So my first question, I had a question myself just based on rereading things, and it came up in public comment. And it's a question about the sublease. So on page 3 of the staff report, gosh, wait a minute. We have actually, I apologize. It's page 3 on the harbor lease management document, which is probably not that number at all on the iPad. On the iPad, it's page 1. It's 101. Is that right? Okay, so page 101 on the iPad, page 3 of the Harbor Lease Management Policy. The first line says, many property management functions of the city, many property management functions of the city, such as lease assignment, sublease approval, lease renewal, extension or renegotiations contractually require City Council review and approval. And I just had a question about that entirety, and then specifically on the sublease approval. I don't recall that, but I may have missed it.
Certainly. And we've talked at our Harbor Study group about the fact that we have different leases. We have Pipkin lease, we have county leases. But under our current master lease, which we now are trying to obtain with all of our tenants, a lease assignment absolutely comes to City Council anytime there's a lease assignment, and we go through that financial background check and make sure that they're capable of assigning the lease. But sublease approval is done at a staff level, and we make certain we have all the subleases and all the agreements are in effect, and we've got a copy of the sublease. So that's done at a staff level, but there are some older leases that require even sublease approval from the City Council. Lease renewals would require council approval, or extensions and renegotiations. All of those always require City Council. So really the only exception is the sublease approval we do at a staff level.
So you would do that. So then further a question would be, if that it would be often that a sublease would change, correct? So it may be when the City Council would see something, it might have a particular sublease in that overall lease, but of course things change. So if one business goes out, another business comes in, the City Council doesn't review that sublease again.
Correct, but the staff does. You have to have consent under the lease agreement. You have to have consent of the city for the sublease, but not from the City Council.
Okay, so then on the document that we have here, it doesn't necessarily say that the staff do that. When I read it, that's why I questioned it, because I thought, I don't know if we're actually doing that on the council level. We're actually not, right?
Correct, under the new master lease, but there are some older ones where
okay.
You do.
Okay, so that gives a little more clarity. And then, I'm sorry, there are a lot of documents, and I just want to make sure that I'm on the right. I'm now going back to staff report, page 2, which if somebody can find the iPad number. Thank you. Oops, no. That's wrong. It's actually 88. Thank you, Ms. Boucher. So I'm looking at page 88 on the iPad, page 2 on the staff report under alternative A under discussion. And I think what I'll reference that in a moment, because what's a question for me conceptually is along the lines of what Mr. Endersby introduced the section on, that perhaps this is a once-in-a-lifetime view of the property from Tidelands South that we are most likely not going to happen again. So I'm thinking, we've heard tonight questions about what's this council's vision for that area, but I think really my question would be much broader than that, and what is the community's vision for the area? And moving forward, what do we want to see? Because that's a very different area today than it was the staff report. So I just wanted to point it out. Oh, I'm sorry, I got the number wrong. Oh, it says lease subsert, lease site 34W and other. Other, it was the other, correct. But there was another communication to the council that wasn't in the staff report. I mentioned it to Mr. Endersby earlier too, and it was just we didn't get it in time for the staff report.
Correct, yeah, that came as a recent email. That was for 3536 property. Empty lease site to the north, I think.
Yes, thanks for the clarification, right? On the lease site. So I'm not sure if the entire council received it, because it just came to me.
I did, yes. Anybody else? Yeah. No, Nancy? Yeah. No? George, did you receive the email?
Or me?
There's an email that was sent out by Mr. Kreiser on another alternative plan for lease site 35 and 36W. I know Mr. Kreiser didn't speak to it in his presentation. He, you know, basically was speaking to 34 at this point. So we'll pause for a minute. We might ask you back in a minute, but go ahead and finish up with
okay.
that.
So then to conclude at this point questions, then we spent a lot of time 2 weeks ago at our budget hearing talking about what generates revenue for the city moving forward, and there are certainly some dire predictions about where we're headed. So I can understand from that perspective why you would see the staff discussing a consolidation issue, and that I can understand that from that point of view. So I would just like to recognize that there is obviously pressure on the city to fund what we're currently providing. And if you've looked at the budget documents, it's pretty tight. And then the counter to that would be, well, what is truly compatible for the neighborhood, and what is it that the community would like to see in the next 15, 20, and 30 years? So those are two ideas that are just kind of, you know, on a balance, which is it? And I'd like to hear my input from the council, but also perhaps input from the public one more time before we perhaps send this into closed session. Thank you.
Before we move on to other questions, I think maybe one of the questions we need to answer is consolidation. And there's another one about 34W, and I think we might want to discuss whether or not we want to even speak to 34W tonight, and then just go ahead and go to closed session on that. So, is there any input on 34W as far as just, bringing that back at a later date for discussion on 34W, and then the other question would be consolidation. Do we want to address the consolidation question as a whole first off, and then we can start working on some of the lease sites? And Nancy, do you have any comments on that? I turned it over to Nancy here. Did you have any comments?
I'd like to hear what George has to say. I'm still thinking.
I'm saying that this consolidation thing, 34W, is very important into this consolidations. How are we going to talk about consolidation without talking about 34W?
Do you think to move forward, we need to be discussing consolidation or just dealing with these lease sites separately?
Well, if you deal with them separately, then you're going to be dealing with the upland owner having the lease site, right? And I believe in that, so I might as well put myself right out there and say that. Then you eliminate consolidation.
So you're not in favor of consolidation then?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
But I am. There is a way you can people can work together where it seems like since consolidated. Can I bring up a thing like we're doing down on the Embarcadero, the Great American Fish Company and the Harbor Hut and the guy next door, forget his name. There's a master plan for the whole thing. Each individual owns the lease site, but there's a master plan for the whole thing. And that's what I thought would be really good for this area. But I don't think we're there yet.
It's a good conversation. I think Noah had some asked some questions too. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're going back and forth, so I'll go ahead, Noah.
Yeah. Thank you. I definitely was prepared tonight to start to make some potentially uncomfortable decisions, particularly because, for obvious reasons. But I think there's a good point that's being raised, and that has to do with the process here and considering that we are ahead of time and there is still some time to take a little more to involve the public and talk more universally about the vision and ask the community to provide some input about the vision for that area, which is really complicated. And personally, I think I have formed my opinions of what I think that we've take this new process calmly and provide the public input and actually pose that question to the community directly. So my feeling would be if we have the time to take a little more time.
Nancy, please. Thank you.
I think George hit the nail on the head when he talked about getting a master plan for that area, and I think that's also what Noah's talking about here, with getting some more input from the community. I know that I sat here and I wrote down questions as everybody talked, and then the legal question came up of things that we can't really discuss. And I think before we move on, the first thing we need is a closed session so that we can find out just what these questions. I mean, I have a lot of questions, and I think with maybe a couple simple exceptions, they're not the kind that we can ask in an open hearing.
Well, why don't you?
Why don't I what?
Ask them, and then I'll tell you whether I can answer them or not. I think you might be confusing two of the issues, whether to consolidate or not. You know, I don't think the public really, you know, weighs in much on that. Certainly the vision and what you talk about as to amenities and what type of uses and what you'd like to see this area, absolutely community input could be very valuable. The one that just jumps out at me and hits me smack in the face in this area is none of the proposals have done anything about access for the public along this area. But maybe that's not a concern from the council or the community that there's any access to the public all the way along here, continuing a boardwalk or doing something in that area.
Well,
other things are just the type of uses. You know, from our standpoint, and the vertical access is one, but also LCP talks about additional boat slips is very important, and that's throughout our documents. But are we overstocked in the boat slips? And really, does this area, now that it's gone through that transition, it shouldn't be there. And it should be used more for mariculture or for wine storage or those type of uses. So I think the public's input on how they envision is absolutely excellent. But the consolidation issue and the legal issues regards to that 134W site, you know, are certainly out there. But I'm not certain that they should affect you on your decision on what the vision of this area. The legal issues shouldn't dictate one way or the other who has it. Your vision is what you want the area to be, and then either these property owners will make it happen, or else, you know, you can find someone, I guess, else that can do it.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I think maybe we mixed up two different things here. But I think, in terms of visioning or a master plan, before we can even talk about whether we want to do any consolidation down here, we need to know what we're going to do. And I do have some real simple questions I can ask Eric or you, and then we can see what kind of trouble I get into from there. Just one of the real quick ones in terms of boat slips. Do we need more boat slips? Are they full down there?
In general terms, throughout the bay, you know, boat slips are pretty much 100% occupancy everywhere. Rarely do you see empty slips from Mr. Coakley's property at the south end to, you know, Marina Square up through Gray's Inn. You know, slips don't stay open for very long. We get them on our bulletin board when people advertise them, and they're down within a week.
Well, and then we recently just had a proposal from Mr. Redican about putting in more boat slips there at Roses, right?
Correct.
So do we need those?
And Smith Held is currently building some on his site. So there are more slips being built. The question is, you know, over how many years does that amortize out to where it's a money-making venture or not, I think is one of the questions. But demand-wise, you know, I wish we were demanding, you know, Santa Barbara prices to make that a little more viable, but we're not. But it's getting better, and certainly, you know, we've got Mr. Redican and Mr. Held moving forward and possibly some others. So the demand appears to be there, and it appears that we have master leaseholders willing, at least on a relatively modest scale, to begin starting to fill that.
Okay, so we could use more boat slips if that becomes part of this. What's the actual zoning down that way? Land or water or both?
Land, I couldn't tell you. I'm looking at Mr. Livick. He can't tell. I'm drilling holes in the back of his head yet, but I believe down at the harbor end, we're down in the H zone.
WF?
Waterfront.
Waterfront.
Yeah. So that can be single-family homes or larger, R2. I mean, What does that mean that you can put there on the waterfront? Poor Mr. Leivick, I'm putting him on the...
And if you don't have cooperation with the landowners, you know, you're building basically a boardwalk self...
Where?
Supported the water? On the water.
Which could be a major issue.
Major undertaking.
Okay. Well, let me try some of these other questions and see how much trouble I get in. Mr. Coakley, on 30 and 33W, I noted it in the report that it says that upland property is for sale. Does that belong to Mr. Coakley, or is it? It does. So if he sells that property, does his lease go with it, his water lease?
There's no requirement that it has. I think he is currently trying to sell both.
Both together?
Yes, but there's no...
Can I ask him to nod or something?
Let's have him come up. And
okay,
then we can
you come up?
He has them both
for sale, and remember that if he transfers the lease, he has to get our approval.
Right.
Right. In other words, if I brought you a buyer before he bought the lease, he has to be approved by the city.
Okay, so you're selling the property?
Yeah, we're selling the land, and then they have the rights to the lease because...
Okay.
Now, keep in mind, again, like it says in your staff report, in 1947, when the state of California gave it to the county, they didn't actually give it to them, but you guys are the, I forget the name you call it, but you guys get to run the place. But you still have to go under the state of California bylaws. You can't sit there and change the bylaws unless you go to the your senator, because you have these laws go way, 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 way back. All of the United States has the same laws on water. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. There's litigatorial rights. Now, State Lands recently came out with a new way of writing it up so the layman could understand it. The upland owner has the same rights as you do at your house. You have a driveway where the county can't come in and block the driveway. Well, you can't come in and block our water rights. We have the right to come and go from the shore. You have the right to go back and forth. So if you did consolidate and put in new marinas, you're going to have to move them way out so you can't block our rights. Now, in the Embarcadero, you're allowed to ship them around because you're the upland owner. And that's why, if you read real closely the bylaws, that's why you have three different areas. Well, our area is all upland owner. And there's been a marina there since the 30s.
Okay, thank you. I think you answered my question. Now I'm going to try to ask a question about 34W. There is no upland property there, right, for Mr. Kreiser? He just has a water lease.
Correct. The upland property is owned by Mr. Martini.
That's okay. So does he have a legal easement to go across that property?
There are current easements on the property. The question is whether they're legal or not. That has not been determined.
That's something we need to discuss.
Right. And even after my legal opinion with you, I don't believe Mr. Martoni is going to agree with my legal interpretation.
But you're our city attorney, so we need to listen. Now, where is Mr. Kreiser's parking? Can I ask that?
It's the city's interpretation that those four spaces are across the street at the...
At the windmill house?
At the windmill house.
Which is contentious.
Which is, again, Mr. Martini does not agree with that interpretation.
All right. So, okay. And I know that Mr. Martini has plenty of parking space on his property. Mariculture. I'm not even going to ask about the boatyard situation. How big are the research boats that come up to this dock, and how often do they come? I mean, big boats. I'm asking this because there was a question several years ago from the neighbors. A lot of the neighbors got upset when somebody wanted to move their tugboats down there. So are these big boats that are going to upset the neighbors? Maybe Mr. Martini could come up and tell us about that.
Well, I think I'm Bill Martini, Morro Bay. First off, as far as the upland property owner, I'll revert back to 225 Main Street. No, it doesn't have adequate parking. We have two separate properties, just to clarify.
But wait a minute. It's getting late, and that wasn't my question.
No, your question before was there was adequate parking for the marina, and I was just saying, no, there's not.
Okay, well,
so
we'll
just
discuss that someplace. But okay. What I want to know now are about these boats you're going to
tie. The research vessels are a secondary possible option. It's not the primary use for the side tie. It's actually nori, mariculture. There's multiple proposals or ideas for mariculture in that area. What I'm saying is this side tie floating dock has other options. It can support work boats, side tie, you know, I mean, on top of mariculture.
And how profitable is the mariculture business?
Currently,
is it taxable?
Well, currently worldwide, nori brings in about $6 billion a year just on that one crop. Extremely profitable. Per ounce, it sells for the same price as abalone. Abalone sells for $80 a pound out at the farm. We just own the ranch next to the abalone farm, so we saw it from a two-man operation to its current operation. Extremely profitable. They have about 40 employees out there. We harvested the nori next door for the last Chinese person that brought in the nori, and it's always been a crop that's native to this coastline. But in the Orient and in the U.S., it's about a $50 to $100 million business or, you know, demand in the U.S., but worldwide it's about $6 billion just on that one form of mariculture.
Okay, my last question,
sure.
And I'm going to really show you my ignorance here. Could you define nori for us and tell us a little
Absolutely.
Bit more about what it is?
Yeah, nori is basically when you're at the sushi bars, you know, on the hook or off the hook. It's what they wrap the rice in, you know, the black paper. It can be used in many forms. They use it in soup in China. It can be shredded. It can be in the paper form. And it's been harvested along this coastline since the 1880s by a Chinese population. And it died out around 1973 when Hao Wong, the last seaweed farmer on the ranch that we bought, passed away. But it is, you know, it's a native crop, and it actually is growing in the bay right now.
Thank you very
okay,
much.
Sure.
Pardon me. Thank you for that. I had to turn it off. Technically, when we bring applicants back up for a second slice at it, it does open public comment. So if anybody did wish to speak for public comment for this item, it would be open at this time. Seeing none, I'd bring it back. And Rob?
I just want to make the one comment about having to lease to the upland loaner. And I'll quote the California Code of Regulations on this 2000C, which states that it directs the leases for tideland and submerged lands, this is a direct quote, shall generally only be issued to riparian or latitorial upland owners or use right holders, provided, however, that such lease or permits may be granted to the best qualified applicant, irrespective of riparian or latitorial status. So although generally you're supposed to, it doesn't say it's a must.
Thanks for that. I've got some questions now. First of all, I know we had a lot of comments about consolidation, and I'm going to part of my and when I took notes on this, I was looking at all these, and I can consider whether or not there's a consolidation or not, and some times it comes back to that. But when I look at the lease sites and the proposals that we have, 3033W, we have one proposal. So tonight, if we thought that was a good proposal with input, we could send the applicant back and direct him to start negotiating with the city. If we get into the discussion of we want to consolidate this, then of course it's going to prolong this, and we're going to be looking at that from a different perspective, which is okay. But I'm going to speak to 33W and just speak to my comments and ask some questions to that. Because when I first looked at the proposal, just as it stands, my first question was there's repair and improvements to that, to the slips and the docks. So to Mr. Endersby, you know, his proposal is fairly descriptive, but what assessment do we have of the repairs that are in this proposal and the repairs that might be necessary? And I guess that assessment I would ask is, you know, your assessment for the cities, basically as the trustee of that that site. So I guess my question is, what assessment have we made to what work really needs to be done as far as repair as I look at this proposal?
Well, we haven't gone in and ground truth or really looked at or done a big structural assessment on that pier. It's up to the leaseholder to maintain the lease properties. We do, and we just got finished with over the past 6 or 8 months, just kind of an overall lease inspection for fire code and other fairly blatant type violations. It did include our slips. It did include our piers. But, again, it wasn't a major in engineers and structural assessment. We would have to go back with the applicant, with the Coakleys, and you know, ground truth that and see exactly what they're proposing. But, right, no, I haven't gone down in
and
person.
That's where we are. That
now we're looking at slips, and, you know, the investment is far less, but the lease terms are far greater. And so, you know, what experience do we have to inform us on, you know, what's an adequate lease term for this site?
It's a great question, and you're right. And in our the upper end of the northern end of the bay, you know, we generally have that formula we go by, although it's not, you know, set in stone. Here it's water-only leases, and it's a little different animal, and we don't have any, you know, set parameters per se. We could look at those leases over the last, you know, 15 or so years, 10, 15 years, and see what sort of years were granted for a number or amount of investment for a comparison's sake. That may be the best way to get at it.
So I imagine if we entered into the negotiations, that's exactly what you'd be doing. But, you know, for tonight, we don't have any of that kind of information to say, you know, this is a good 30-year proposal or a good 10-year proposal. We, you know, it's kind of hard to get through that part.
Yeah, and I think as the city attorney said, at that point, I think we're starting to cross over into negotiating with that landowner for actual terms of the lease.
So, and that's the other question. So we're talking about whether or not it's a sewing up this, speaking to the opportunity of, hey, we could be able to align all these lease sites up into one consolidated lease, as you were talking about. But that's only if all the leases were, let me step back, because if all of these lease sites were negotiated for a 10-year lease, then certainly we can revisit that in another 10 years. So, you know, I'm still kind of looking for, you know, that type of information. You know, if we send if we send staff back to negotiate on this, then we would enter into a closed session with all these different lease sites, but we don't know exactly the terms and the years that would coincide or not coincide. So, you know, it's a little bit, you know, difficult from that standpoint, but, you know, I'll, as far as the 3033W goes, as far as the proposal, they're addressing, you know, basically in doing the improvements. And, you know, I don't know about a 30-year lease, but, you know, at this point, that would be something we could direct you to go back and negotiate those terms and then come back with just this one 3033W lease site, as I see it.
Yes, absolutely. I think
okay.
That's one of the things we're asking.
Okay. And I guess I would ask for, you know, in a minute there, I'd talk about that. And then I know this is a challenge because we have so many of these that are, and this is the whole topic of this is bringing all of these together at once because of the opportunity to consolidate. You know, as I see the 34, which aside from the dispute we're talking about with parking, we've got an applicant that is addressing all the proposed needs of repair. And I know Mr. Martoni, you know, talked about, you know, doing repairs and improvements as well, but not to the description that we have in Mr. Kreiser's proposal. So at this point, if you're weighing proposals, you know, one is pretty descriptive on what they want to do and the other is not. So, you know, to get direction and guidance on who we would go forward with, I think is a little bit.
I think if your decision is whether to have direct staff to negotiate with Mr. Kreiser or to direct staff
to negotiate with Mr. Martini, that's a question that I want to discuss with you in closed session.
Okay. Okay. Then, you know, still, I'm, you know, aside from other input here, I look at 30 and 33W as something that we could direct staff to go back and negotiate with. Let me finish for a minute, George. Unless we decide we're going to consolidate, and I'm trying to pick these things off one at a time. George, you have a comment.
Okay, I didn't want to interrupt you. I just wanted to. You're saying one thing, and then you're saying another. You're saying let's go back and work out a deal with 30W, but then you're also saying still talk about putting these things all together.
No, I'm saying that right now I see 33.
So once you give 30W, once you give him a direction and mm-hmm. a lease,
that's right.
Then he's out of the loop. Then he is no longer part of hooking them all up together.
That's exactly right. And that's where it went back to. I said,
that's fine with me because I don't want to hook them up anywhere. But that's, you know, I just wanted to point this out.
Yeah.
That you are eliminating him from connecting with the rest of the lease sites.
I understand that. And I was just going at process-wise. I'm just saying, here's one that we have, and we could actually send it out and start negotiating on that.
Forward.
Yeah.
And then there's the part of me that wants to go to the restroom. So if we could, you know, take a break or finish this off and then take a break, that would be appreciated.
We're in the middle of this, and if we need to take a break, we can. So let's just take the break for those types of things and keep our conversations to ourselves, and then we can reconvene and finish discussing this. All right. Thanks. We'll take a quick five. Thanks, Noah. Okay, so we left off, and Noah, we left off with your request for a break, so we'll come back with where we left off. And I just completed discussing the 3033W proposal, and basically I was looking at that as something we can send staff out to negotiate. You were commenting on, hey, you know, we have an opportunity here. So I'm still looking at the rest of these proposals as, hey, can we just send these back right now and look at what we can do to start moving forward on negotiating? That's where I'm at. We didn't get input on whether or not we're going to consolidate these. And personally, I'm not sure I'm at the point where I'd be in favor of consolidating it myself. So You had some comments for me, so I'd leave you with that.
Yeah, I feel a lot better, and I'm looking at this and thinking that we can move forward on the majority of these, except for perhaps 34W, to try to sort that out just
yeah,
a little more.
Yeah.
Be careful about that, but on the other sites, There's not really much of a change, and so I think besides talking about some things like the public access as a discussion point for the lease discussions, and then I had a few others individually for each one, I'd really like to keep on moving forward on this.
Okay.
And not carry everyone through the mud for too much longer as far as the applicants.
So if that being the case, you know, I just went through 3033W. And I kind of went through my laundry list there. Does anybody have any other comments on 33W as far as what, you know, what we'd be looking for on that? And then we can clear up that proposal.
Just to conclude from my side on 33W, I think generally if we talk about ask staff to explore the public access, vertical boardwalk concept in each of these, Some of it may not be possible or feasible, particularly, you know, the amount of cost that would be involved. But I think it's important for them to at least bring that up. Besides that, the question of investment versus length is an important one there too. Besides, I'd be comfortable moving forward there.
Okay, Nancy.
Well, I first would like to know if you and I are the only ones against the consolidation, because I don't think we should look at making these all one lease. I think we want to keep them separate leases, but we need to clarify that. But I'm thinking we could just have staff go forward with 3033W and also with 37W, because there doesn't seem to be any problem there. The other ones, I guess we need to talk about in closed session. But if we could get those to staff,
that's,
I think,
good.
That
so
would
far
be a step forward.
Let's get comments on 3033W, and then we can get all that rolled in.
Well, that's just what I was going to say. I think we could move ahead on what Nancy just got through saying, and maybe if we could get this moving and have staff start to negotiate the lease sites with these two. And I think that the other two need to be brought back to closed session to find out all the legalities to it, and then we'll settle that one. But I do believe we can settle 37 and 3030W.
Okay, so just, Christine, did you have any more comments on 33W?
Rob, did you want to speak before?
There are no legality issues with 35W and 36W.
Right.
So that could be put in that to negotiate,
yep,
with the Upland loaner. Right. And as to 34W, because what I'm hearing is I haven't heard anybody.
If you're the public. You know what I mean, though, right?
You know what? Instead, I think we just ought to, you know, at least give that direction and see where we
okay
go before we start debating that. And,
okay,
and
I'm
if
just
that's
wondering
the case, then we can wrap up 33W, and I think we've got
well
enough information on that.
Really quickly, I think that this is the one that we should move forward on, because it's the most, it's going to expire in December. So I know, and it's for sale, and there are a lot of reasons to move forward. And I would be the fifth person that is, at this point, not looking to consolidate. But I'm glad we had the discussion, and I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. So 37W, I'm just going to peel these back. Same thing, we had public access was one that came up on that. And I would say the term, as far as how we determine the investment over the length of the term for the lease site.
We could probably call that one universal.
Mm-hmm.
If I could, on 37W, of course, with the haul out and the boatyard being a very important service, particularly at the moment, but also I'd be interested in evaluating in the negotiations some containment options for the materials as they're cleaned, so on, improved containment options, see what ideas the leaseholder has, and there's something there that would be worthwhile.
Are you
for hazardous material containment.
Sure. Yeah, I would trust that our, you know, that would be built into any kind of requirements. But basically, what we just want to explore that hazardous, you know, the hazardous materials that are there during the work are being contained.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I would think that would be commonly done. 37W. The only question I have on 37W was, they also have an option to, did they not have an option to go to go into the 36 and 35 as well?
He did. The Myers did throw that out. It wasn't in very great detail other than interest in possibly moving over into 35, 36, but that was about it, just interest in it. Didn't really give much detail.
As far as the 37W goes, I think I don't have any more comments, but we can proceed with the 37W if he wants to since there's really nothing descriptive to the other two, 35 and 36, could we just proceed with negotiating with on 37W? And if he has any other desires to combine 35 and 36 at that point, would you come back to us with that?
Yeah, I don't see why we couldn't add that on and address it later.
Yeah. If you're all saying not to consolidate, then why would we send mixed messages to it, one of them to say, but we might consolidate later?
Okay.
So, I mean, if you want us to pursue that, we would, but I was we just wouldn't addressing, we would tell him no.
Right. I was just addressing his proposal. Okay. You have a question?
I would like to bring up one point about the consolidation. That's what I'm talking about with over here for 35 and 36W and 34W. There could possibly be a consolidation there if there are some legal problems.
No different than 31, 32, and 33.
There are no legal issues addressed with 35W, 36.
Right.
Whatsoever. So,
but if there is some with 34, we might want to consolidate that to 35W.
Well, you wouldn't need the consolidation because the property owner is already under the same ownership. So it's not really I don't consider that a consolidation.
Okay, that clears it up.
Okay, so that brings us back to 36 and 35W, and. Do you have any comments on how we'd want to proceed on this? And I'd like to start off with some comments on this because basically, in my opinion, we have a proposal with kind of a concept, but I'm hesitant to on tying these lease sites up, especially for something like 30 years, if it's not a viable project, or if it's not something that is will be followed through on. So, to me, when I look at the mariculture concept, I would think that there should be some more of a business plan to this to substantiate what this is. Is this a viable project or not? So, I look at that as input for how we proceed on 36 and 35W on that. I'd welcome any other comments. Anything to the left? George, do you have anything?
Robust proposal, to use a word that the mayor likes, to come back and see where we stand with something like that, because I think it would be something that potentially we're talking about. One reason to not consolidate is the neighborhood compatibility. Mm-hmm. So I would be curious to know how you harvest it and what kind of transportation comes and goes and how often that would happen and what that would look like.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that I would love to flesh out and see, but it's very intriguing, of course. That's where I'd stand. And then I would just, again, there may be other proposals out there, and I don't know if this, right now this it seems like we've got this proposal, and then there's kind of another sort of proposal that some of us have seen and some haven't. But, I mean, it's like, is this the one thing we're going to go with on that site, or
for
what do we do?
For the sake of the staff report, the other proposal, as I understand it, isn't up for discussion.
Right.
Is that the other discussion for Mr. Kreiser's proposal on 35, 36 for the?
If I understand where you're heading is was not to consolidate and to negotiate with the upland property owners. So in that case, if Mr. Kreiser was looking to use part of that lease, we would direct him to negotiate a sublease with the upland. Who would then have a lease for that water site.
Clarity, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Nancy, anything?
I think at this point we probably need to move everything except 34W maybe forward to Eric and Rob so that they can get started on this. And my only problem with 35, 36 is that it's not a very complete proposal. I think we need more direct information, or we don't. Eric will need that. So, Eric and Rob. So, I think we just move it on forward, let it get started, and with the understanding that we need more more detailed information.
No?
Yeah, I would agree, and I think it would be exciting too, because we've talked about this for a long time. at 35, 36W, and to get that moving forward and get more details about how a NORI operation could actually be conducted. And I'll recall back to Mr. Schultz's comments about 34W that we can direct to begin to move forward to get some better details from the Martinis about what their proposal would be for that site, but not direct sole negotiations there, and do our closed session report and then come back with both of the options and better details.
Did I understand you saying we'd come back in closed session with this item?
That with 34W, we would get a brief right. in closed session on the legal part of
right.
it, but we would also direct staff to negotiate a better understanding of the details. If you'd like to describe it, you can, but a better understanding of the details of the proposal from the Martinis, and continue forward carrying the proposal from Mr. Kreiser, allow him to update it, and then we come back and evaluate both those proposals.
Right.
You know, not as in depth as what we're talking about with these other ones, but help us clarify what the options could be on either side of that.
Okay.
So,
yes.
Looks like Mr. Schultz wants to say something.
I want to recap for the public and for council, because
yeah,
I know this item's taken a while, but let's recap, because this is a real change in how we've negotiated leases, and typically, what would have happened with these four proposals where they put in and wrote a letter to the city, we would have brought those to you in closed session and quickly asked you, do you want us to begin negotiations with these property owners, or do you want to try to do consolidation or something else? So that's really what's on your plate tonight, is just how you're going to see a lot of these is just initial proposals where we haven't fleshed out their whole agreement. In fact, you know, these are all going to go through Planning Commission. The actual projects, lateral access, and all of that would still have to go through the complete permitting process or any improvements. So it's just the very first preliminary stage of, you know, do you want us to negotiate with this property owner for a new lease on these sites, or whether you had wanted to go out for a request for proposals or to consolidate, or maybe there was some issue we hadn't thought of that the public was going to help you maybe decide on. So that's really it, and it's just the first step in the process, and there's many more that we'll go through.
Okay, thanks for that. So we're clear on the 35 and 36W, then we're current on that. And
I
that
think on all
and
of
that only leaves the 34W.
I think Mr. Schultz just made a very good point. This is just step one. I think we need to move this on to begin negotiations with all of these leaseholders. And that's all we have to do.
Lease sites 30W and 33W, 35W and 36W, and 37W. And we would exclude any negotiations at this time with lease site 34W.
Well, I would at least, staff would like to explore with the Upland property in more in detail his proposal if it was granted to him, because that helps in the closed session negotiation.
Okay.
If we're able to resolve our legal disputes, that certainly would influence the negotiations.
Okay. So then we just need a motion, as stated here, that to move forward on all the lease site negotiations.
So moved.
I have a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you. That completes item D4. And we're moving on to item D5. And before we do this, I'm just going to make a request to council. We do have another item, D6, following this. And I think in the sake of time, if we would have concurrence to postpone item D6 and bring that back at a later date, we can get through item D5 tonight. Do I have
I would agree
support
with
on that.
That? Yes.
Any more support? Okay, good. Thank you for that. And we'll proceed with item D5, and that's Ms. Luker. Thank you.
Good evening once again. This discussion tonight is a review of the 2008 Management Partners Study that was completed. Just as a little background, in 2007, the city hired Management Partners, a firm, to produce a report called the City Organizational and Financial Options. And that report is on the city's website. And basically it provided 38 recommendations, including 21 expenditure control strategies, 13 revenue creation strategies, and 4 long-range strategies. The city included those recommendations in numerous discussions they had over the years in 2008, 2009, and last in early 2010. In December of 2012, the City Council asked staff to bring back a proposal from management partners to consider updating the study. We went ahead and contacted Andy Belknap of Management Partners, and he provided a proposal that you considered at your February 26th meeting. The proposal provided that the update effort would cost approximately $40,000 and require about 230 hours of work for Management Partners to go through and update. The council discussed that item and then asked or directed staff to provide an in-house update of the progress made on the recommendations in April and May of 2013. So what we've done this evening is we've attached the original document that the City Council reviewed in their August 2008, and that document was then updated in July and August of 2009, and you'll note we have added a third or a fourth update March of 2013 and indicated what, if any, further progress has been made on those recommendations. I think with that, I will save going through the document item by item, but I'm happy to answer any questions about the information contained or about the staff report.
Thank you for that. At this point, we do have people in the audience. It is a business item. If anybody would like to speak on this, it is open for public comment. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. I'll look to my left to open it up for comments. Would council like to just go through these items one by one and then comment or ask any questions? Or would you like to make comments?
I had another option. I had another idea, actually, rather than do that. A quick question. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Here.
All right, we're just doing more housekeeping.
I'll share with you.
More housekeeping. Thank you. So very quickly, a question to Ms. Luker. Is the cost for the update fairly firm, would you guess?
We talked a little bit about that when Management Partners originally gave the number, and they had some initial concerns about doing a semi-update. My understanding when they talked about update is they were going to go back in and do update a lot of the city numbers and such. So if we wanted to focus on a particular area, if the council was interested in one of these options, we could certainly go back to Management Partners and say we'd like an update in this area, but I'm not sure that really makes sense. It might be more of a staff focus. So they could be flexible, but they weren't very flexible. And they were really going to start, just to finish up, I'm sorry, they were really going to start more with kind of the step one of even perhaps getting the focus groups back together. So that sort of an update.
Okay, what's up?
Review all the items that we have here before us tonight. Would that be, is that accurate? That's what you were getting at?
It was my understanding that they would go back, and if you remember the original report, it had talks about, a no city option and expenditures and revenues and where those lines went. So they would be updating that information. I'm sure with any sort of professional organization, if we said we've got this much money, we want you to do this, they can. I think we just want to look at, does it make more sense to focus on one area or the whole study? But my understanding was they were, pretty much square one.
Yeah. And I think part of that was it gave us, we've had questions whether or not we wanted to review to do another sales tax initiative for paving, and I think part of their report went over revenue options. I don't know if that would be part of a new assessment, if they would start on touch on that or not, but it might help the city, through that in that assessment. In addition, I think it just comes down to the report, which you know, I think to get more direction and information from the financial options we had, I think it was really a good report in 2008, you know, a five-year cycle to revisit this, as, you know, I think would be pretty exciting. But, you know, I don't know what kind of support I would get that from that from the rest of council. And how that dovetails into our goals, because I think there's maybe a couple things that might be able to dovetail into an assessment with some of our goals. But you know, I don't know if anybody has any other questions. None?
Can we afford it?
And that would be part of our budget process, which is a good time to discuss it. No, did you have anything?
I'd say that it's important that we have this discussion now, so if we do want to make some decisions that is included in our budget process this year, looking at the list and seeing what has been accomplished and what remains, I'm glad to see that we have made significant progress. I'm looking at the list and thinking to myself, a number of the items there for me aren't attractive, and particularly a number of the taxing options. Mm-hmm. And I find myself wondering, with the update, what would management partners bring to the table that would be worth the investment? So I'd really want to have that discussion with them to make sure that what we spend would come back to us in value. And I think that would be worthwhile, though, because there's things that an independent assessment would probably come up with a better, less emotional review of what we have going on, and may open up some new ideas. But again, I'd just be very cautious about throwing a lot of money at this when I think there's things that we could just take a look at ourselves and make a determination on.
Sure, I appreciate your comments. Any other comments? Christine?
Well, I think my comments would be along those lines. I mean, obviously, we want to think about the cost moving into the budget hearing, and the idea that if we're going to spend something on reevaluating where we stand with expenditures and revenues, then would we go a different direction altogether, perhaps? Is this still the same tool we want to use? This is the same organization. Or if we would choose to say half the cost, $15,000, what would that get us? That might be where I'm going now, because I do think it is hard for us to look at the budget and just have ideas that pop into our head about, you know, a revenue-generating idea. I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, we've all been, everyone submits us great revenue-generating ideas, but that really is, hit a wall on that particular issue, and we keep hearing that from, we've heard it from our staff, and we hear it from the public, is it's all well and good, but what are you going to do to raise your revenue to continue your service? So I do understand that we have cut expenditures, and you can see in this report, and that's what's very valuable about taking a look at it. We're getting our money's worth again just by utilizing the report and then seeing how much has been scaled back. And I think that there will be an end, though, to how far we can scale back. I mean, many, you know, some people will say, oh, you could still do these three things. Mm-hmm. But then there will be a point when we do have to focus on the generating of the revenue to continue the quality of service, which we all enjoy. Mm-hmm. So I would be very willing to look at another study if we could get it for a different point of view, a different company, and much, maybe half the price.
I think there's some caution amongst council on where we want to proceed with this, and you know, I think that's well received. What we've done with our assessment in the last 10 years, and you know, are there other areas? So I do see the value in exploring and doing that assessment just to give us that self-check. But I appreciate the caution in how we're spending our money, because clearly, you know, I feel the same way. And especially if we're looking at, you know, the revenue generators that, you know, do include, you know, more taxes, which I don't think, you know, that's something that we want to proceed with the exception of the sales tax, which came up as one of our items on our goals. But you're waving your hand for some comments.
Yeah, I was almost dreading this item going into it, because it has the potential to come up with, you're just generating more questions for us to wrestle with and lay on top of us, and we're already looking at a number of questions, and And I guess I want to say that tonight's conversation for me has almost clarified where I think we should go. And I would say 5 years is quite a long time. But if we were to wait another year before we plan on addressing this and updating it professionally, perhaps, that would probably give us a better idea about some of the tools and the changes we've identified in the first study, which included, you know, some form of an economic development program, and we're going to start to see how these things are working. We're going to be looking at the new management of the leases and how that's working, and I think overall the clear a picture we can have when we go to a professional organization to evaluate us, then that's just going to result in a better study and analysis that we could then utilize. So I think I'd probably suggest that we defer this till next year and leave it open in the sense of it, particularly if this would help us with approaching the sales tax, or if there is an element with approaching that sales tax evaluation mm-hmm. to benefit streets and our pavement. So at this point, I think there shouldn't be a hurry for us to say, well, it's been 5 years, we've got to get this done now. What would be the harm in waiting an extra year and having that much more information about how things are performing? Yeah.
Thanks for that. I think there's one other thing I think about with the staff report. Considering the work that Ms. Luker had to put into with all the updates, which is great. I mean, I think, you know, at that point, if we come back in a year, you know, I would guess that the lion's share of the work is done, and we could use it as a tool to say, hey, let's revisit this in a year and say and see, you know, what else has been picked off on this. I think that would probably be a good option for us.
I'll end my comments, I promise. Just one last comment, I think it's really great that Ms. Luker did update this, and I would say regardless of any way we go, that annual update from your office will be helpful for record keeping and, you know, providing future councils with some form of placeholder about what's transpired.
Nancy.
That's it? You're sure? Okay. I think the update and the report are very valuable. At this point, I think what we really need to concentrate on is going back, and we can each read and look at the revenue-generating possibilities. And then we need to have an open discussion, perhaps as part of our next budget hearing, and hear from our community about what they're willing to do. We know we have a tight budget. We know we need more money. What will the citizens of Morro Bay be willing to do, looking at all the options? I mean, I think we need to get real down and dirty and practical about this whole thing.
Okay. Any other? George?
You know, I was reading that report. They talk about everything about getting revenue into town, but they forget the one number thing of bringing revenue into town. That is to bring more business into this town. And we're neglecting to approach this. We're not doing the right things on this. We have actually done things to discourage business to come in this town. We need to make it real easy for them. Look at some of the cities around us, what they're doing. And when you bring business into town, your revenue is going to build. You're not going to be sitting here worrying about, well, should I tax him or tax a 911 number or something like that. I'm foolishness almost. Let's start thinking about how we can develop this town with more business. Then our revenue will be here, and we won't have to have this discussion.
Thanks, George. Christine?
Well, I think that's well taken. I think that's the exciting thing about putting money, dedicated money, into economic development for the very first time last year. This city made a commitment to having an economic development program. Other cities have had them. We never did. That's a very big step in the right direction. And then this council...
Motion or action that needs to be taken with this item, we can move on to...
Can we just confirm that Ms. Luker obviously is prepared to do this, but just confirm that we would like to see an annual update as an informational item, and then that would provide the opening if we felt it was necessary to then start to explore whether we want to do a professional outside agency update.
I think we'd have concurrence on that.
Great. I just want to confirm
we'll put
that
on the agenda planning guide as a yearly report.
Great.
Thank
Thanks.
You. Thanks. That completes item D5. We had D6 on the agenda. That was an item that we were going to forego, but we will open up for public comment, I suppose, if people wanted to speak to item D6. Seeing none, we're going to bring that back at a later date. We're on to declaration of future agenda items. I'll look to my left. Any future agenda items to my right?
I have one.
Nancy.
My future agenda item, to develop and implement a plan for the Front Street parking lot that we inherited or received somehow from Dynegy. And this plan would include fence removal, signage, and a completion date.
I think we've got that on the agenda coming back that's going to propose that?
We do. We simply put it as the parking plan, but what we'll do is incorporate, if it's the council's desire to incorporate the issues, but we do have it as the Front Street parking plan, and it's on the agenda.
Great.
I would like it to include a discussion of what fencing will be removed and what kind of signage will be down there, and a completion date as to when this will all be done.
So when that item comes back to council, won't we be discussing all those very items? Okay. All right.
It would just be nice, though, if we could have some information before we start. I mean, I want something besides just a parking lot. You know, we need more detail from probably Mr. Leivick.
What's it going to look like?
About what it's going to look like,
how it's going to work.
How it's going to work, and how soon they think they can do it.
Absolutely.
And
okay.
Then my next question is, when does it come up on the agenda?
Well, we talked about this at the staff level. I think we were initially we were waiting to make sure that the property was secured, and Mr. Schultz has basically said that we can move ahead on it. So I think probably at the next, maybe first or second meeting in June, talk a little bit at our department head meeting tomorrow. What we need to do prior to it coming up.
If I could add something to that.
Sure.
It'd be nice, too, if that conversation included the boatyard as a possibility there, which has been mentioned before.
I don't want to add that to my
question. We're already covered on the parking lot plan. I think that's something that's coming back anyway. So do you want to make a separate motion for the boatyard parking lot?
I actually think that would be part of the discussion is possible uses for it. And the way I see it is how it ties even into the Front Street and bringing back, you know, the Maritime Museum and taking another look at that whole area and how you envision it so that we can get direction as to how to implement that plan.
Yeah, I thought actually when I agendized that the last time that all these items that of discussion was what we were going to be discussing. So
yeah.
I think, you know, we'll have the opportunity to discuss boatyard, signs, fences, and all that.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Seeing no more future agenda items, we will adjourn tonight. Thank you very much.